Jam-packed One Bills Live today. Steve Tasker along with John Murphy.
Bills have a new quarterback, new coordinator. What should the Buffalo offense look like in 2018? We want to hear from you.
Also at 12:30, we're going to get a visit from free agent tackle Marshall Newhouse. He's going to join us.
This guy coached Josh Allen. He coached Carson Wentz. The Wyoming offensive coordinator Brett Vegan joins us today at 1 o'clock.
Also at 2 o'clock, Mike Sando from ESPN is going to give us an unfiltered look at what some NFL execs said about the top draft picks.
One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
What do you know? Ready or not, here we are live at One Bills Drive, live at New Era Field. We're in the At Pro Sports Training Center right next to New Era Field. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here for the next 3 hours. 3 hours of live scintillating talk about the Bills and the NFL. Good afternoon, everybody. Steve, good afternoon to you.
What's up, Murph?
How are you, too?
Good to see you again.
You doing okay?
Oh, yeah. Good to be back.
Yeah.
Good to be back in the saddle.
Yeah, getting used to it. Now you're putting your your days together. Your work days are being stacked on top of
getting
each other.
Getting into a nice groove.
Yes.
I went home after the show yesterday because you kind of get out of here after the show, get kind of wind it up because, you kind of get in early so we do the show beforehand, and after the show's over, you kind of flush the day,
Yes.
So I went home and spent an hour and a half hauling logs around my
yard.
I got trees on my – and, they got blown over because of the wind, and it's the first chance with the last good weather, and I tried to get outside and do – and I was in a full sweat yesterday after the show just hauling.
Are you sore today, lifting up logs?
Making my yard look like something other than garbage.
Are you sore?
I don't work that hard. I may be overstating the full lather, but it was hard. I was beat.
That's a full day. I went home from here, and part of our crew, our digital media crew, they do these shows. They did three of them last year, three more coming up this year, top 10 lists, and they will air this summer. They're really well-produced, really good shows. Actually, they fill in some of the blanks when we're off during the summer, so that's good to know. But they interview, they need people with historical perspective on the Bills, and I've been around here so long, I guess I provide some of that perspective.
Yeah.
And it was an hour and a half, and it was grueling. It wasn't like picking up logs and raking like you did, but, my memory was taxed. I remembered the people, but I'm like, I don't remember that game. What? And they had to fill me in.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't have that kind of memory, I guess. You know what? I remember the people. I don't remember the stats. I don't remember the particulars of some games, but I remember the people. I don't know what that means.
It's interesting because you go back and look at all that stuff, and when you're in the moment and when you're living through it, like all those great moments they had back in the 90s and even even all the way up into the 98 when they made that Super Bowl run and the home run throwback all the way there, and then you go through the drought. The stories, the beauty of them are in the details. And if you're not involved in it, you don't have the details. Like all those the trades that happened back. And back in the day, when I first came in, nobody traded anybody for any reason. There's no free agency. You just had to wait until they were done with the guy. So, top 10 trade, I don't know that before these last 15 months there was any trades noteworthy except for the Kenneth Bennett trade,
That's the one that stands out to me, yeah.
And that's – other than that, the details are – it's sketchy at best.
I found the crew would ask me questions about some of these trades, some of these deals, some of these free agent acquisitions, some of the great games. And I remember some details. I do remember the people, though, more the players and coaches. Yeah. And I'd wind up telling them stories, funny stories, I thought, about the players, the funny interactions you had. They asked me about the deal that Tom Donahoe made when he they signed Peerless Price to a franchise tag and then traded him to Atlanta to get a draft pick. Really good move. Really good trade. And I said, I remember that trade. But I remember more than that the encounter I had on the phone with Wade Phillips. Wade had left here. He was in Atlanta, defensive coordinator. Trade details leaking out. This is pre-Twitter, pre-internet days.
Right.
What was it, 10 years ago maybe? And I said, who do I know in Atlanta? Oh, wait a minute. I know Wade. I don't have his number, but I bet Wade's number is listed. And sure enough, directory assistants, Wade Phillips in the phone book just as he was in Buffalo when he was head coach. I call up Wade on a Thursday night, 8 o'clock at night. I said, Wade, John Murphy, hey, how you doing? Two questions. First question, though, most important question, why do you have a listed number? Why is your number enlisted? He goes, well, Murphy, so I can hear from guys like you. How you doing? But that Wade was nuts. He had a listed number when he was head coach.
Yeah, anybody could call him.
Yeah, anybody could say, hey,
and the fact that he picked up the phone.
Yeah. You know, why did you punt on that fourth down? You know, pick him up the phone and call him on Monday night. He was a great guy. He is a great guy.
Yeah,
anyway,
he still is.
That's what we did yesterday, Steve and I, and now we're doing the show, and it's going to be a pretty good one, we believe. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Marshall Newhouse, Bills offensive lineman, acquired in free agency back in March, second week of March. He's bounced around to a few different teams. He could figure into some significant playing time here, though, based on what he's done in Oakland. And he's an intelligent guy, Steve. We had him on the show back when he first signed back in the second week of March. But a really good talker and a really good guy. He's got a lot of different interests.
He was also on the Green Bay Packer team as a rookie that won Super Bowl 45 against Pittsburgh. Yeah, he's got a Super Bowl ring. Played with Cincinnati for a minute, New York Giants for a minute, lately of Oakland. So he's a thoughtful guy. It'll be interesting to get his take on, you know, he's traveled around. I love guys who, because it never used to be this way. I like talking to guys about their transition from team to team to team. I did it once in my career, and it was, you know, it was pretty harrowing. I mean, it's, you don't know what you're going to walk into, because every locker room, while they're kind of all the same, they're all really different as well because of the personalities involved. So I always love talking to guys who have been on different teams. And, you know, you have a kind of wide swath of friendship through those rosters. It's kind of fun to talk to guys like that.
Marshall Newhouse will be with us at 12:30 today, one of the Bills' free agent signings. He's here for the off-season conditioning program, which will give way to the rookie camp, rookie mini camp coming up this weekend. 1 o'clock, back to rookie talk. Obviously, Josh Allen, Buffalo's first-round draft pick. We're going to talk with his offensive coordinator at the University of Wyoming, Brent Vegan, who also before that coached Carson Wentz.
At North Dakota.
North Dakota, yeah, North Dakota State. And a guy who would, you know, we all know what we think are the flaws and the strengths of Josh Allen. This guy would know them intimately, working with Josh Allen for a couple of years. We'll get into some of that with him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because all those guys who coach him, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I anticipate Brent Vegan is going to say nothing but stellar things about his guy, Josh Allen. And, you know, let's face it, for those of us in Buffalo, for a lot of us, we need to hear some positive stuff about him, because we were, you know, a good number of the fans, they want to know. Because, listen, once the draft is over, everybody stops watching those films. You know, they don't go back and look at it. Maybe they do. Some of the people who were not on board with the Josh Allen pick go back and look and say, oh, try and talk themselves into it. Other people never like him until he wins at all with the team, or Josh Rosen flames out, or whoever else they wanted to pick at that point. But we got Brent Vegan coming on, and he's going to tell us, you know, his thoughts on it. He's going to give some specific instances, maybe some stories about Josh Allen and why he was a top pick in the draft.
And then coming up at 2, I'm looking forward to this, one of the better writers, national writers on the NFL, Mike Sando, who covers the league for ESPN, wrote a really good piece that he posted on ESPN.com last week. Execs, NFL execs, unfiltered on every team's draft picks. So what he did was go to NFL teams, went to the top NFL football executives, told them, I need quotes on this other team's draft, and they're anonymous. Say whatever you want. And some really interesting ones, and some interesting ones on Josh Allen. Can I read this one? Did you see this one?
I saw it. Go ahead.
Josh Allen. It's a cold-weather quarterback who's big and strong, not frail and little in a cold-weather city where it's windy. He went on to say he's talking about Josh Allen, an unidentified AFC executive. He is aw shucks, likes football, makes his team visits with sweats and tennis shoes, perfect for Buffalo. They don't need Baker Mayfield in designer clothes, okay? They need Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, for somebody to say that about Josh Allen is pretty cool.
Yeah, the unfiltered part of the expletives that you edited out. Yeah. The guy was, well, he says, when they make that, I mean, there's a little emphasis on it. You got to know that they see the fit. It's interesting to see they see the fit, particularly in the top draft picks that Buffalo made. This NFL exec, we don't know who it was. We can't tell you which team he spoke to about the Buffalo Bill draft picks. But he had some pretty interesting stuff about not only – Josh Allen, but also Tremaine Edmonds, Taron Johnson, and Sarom Neal as well. It's going to be interesting to – we're going to be able to flesh that out, because it's pretty encouraging for some of these teams where these guys go back and talk about other teams and what they saw drafted, and they get some encouragement from it.
Said it yesterday, and I believe this, Stephen, is that we move further away from the draft. Now we're approaching 2 weeks from the draft, round one of the draft. Opinions change, and the opinion on Josh Allen – look, compared to it was 2 weeks ago today, 2 days before the draft, two weeks ago today, you mentioned Josh Allen on this show or most NFL radio shows, and people are like, oh, stay away, 56% completion percentage. You can't hit the side of a barn. All right. And the completion percentage was right. Now, 2 weeks later, it's flipped, kind of, hasn't it? I mean, we read stuff every day. It's people's opinions, the knowledgeable opinions, have flipped about Josh Allen. It's like, oh, that's a good fit for that team. That's a good pick. I see why they did that.
I don't know.
Great upside. Everybody talks about his upside.
That's right. I don't know whether it's the grass is always greener, where you look at your picks and you look at everybody else's and you think, wow, they're. It's like being in warm-ups on a football field, and this is true at every level. Whether you're 8 years old playing padded football or whether you're sitting in the Super Bowl, you look down at the other end of the field, and those guys always look bigger, faster, more talented. They look more like better athletes. They look better in their uniforms. You know, they just look great, and you got to go up against them. It's kind of scary. And it's the same way with these draft picks. You see these other teams, they go, wow, they really had a good plan. They've got guys that just fit their system. Their guy doesn't really have the flaws our guy does. And I think that's the way people do it. I mean, you see, and so when you get people to talk about your draft, they're always really complimentary because it looks like, yeah, I see your point. I see what you're doing there. And then when you talk about your own, it's like, wow, because there's so many questions about all those guys. It's like, oh, I don't know.
You know your own better.
I hope they work out. You know, it's that kind of mentality.
Yeah. Well, I think you know your own guys better, too, and you know their flaws. And maybe when you look at somebody else's team, you're like,
you can't see them.
You don't see them.
That's right.
All the flaws will be there, and all the strengths will be there as well. So pretty good lineup. Marshall Newhouse coming up at 12:30. Wyoming offense coordinator Brent Vegan coming up at 1. And Mike Sando from ESPN with NFL Execs Unfiltered. Of course, we want to get you involved, and the phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, the number to call.
Yeah, and we also have the Twitter question for the day. Is a new bunch of new faces on offense. Probably it's going to be a new quarterback. A lot of new offensive linemen, maybe a new receiver or two. And a new offensive coordinator. What do you think the Bills' offense should look like? And go on and follow us on Twitter and find out and give us an idea of what you think it's going to look like. The question actually, it reads, what should a 2018 Buffalo Bills offense look like? And it should say, should it lean on Shady again? Quick, short passing game maybe? Open it up and go deep or something else? So take your pick on all of those. It's kind of a little bit of a horse race between those top ones. And I've always thought, and when we talked about this, Murph, before the show started, Shady's your best player offensively. He's the one that you know what you're going to get out of him. Now, there may be somebody who emerges during the season, but Shady's your guy, and I think that's where the ball is going to start. A lot of people say, hey, open it up deep. Let's go deep. And that's the fans talking right there because it is a passing game. And the quick short passing game may take over, and I think if the ball goes through Shady's hands and the offense does, you're going to see a lot of quick short passes.
I guess it's important to mention, too, that if you respond on Twitter, enter Twitter poll, or if you want to call us up at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550, we'll take your calls, obviously. The question is worded specifically, what should the Bills' offense look like, not what will it look like. So we're not asking you for a prediction. We're asking you for what's the best way. Yeah. What's the best way to win games, basically, is what we're saying for this Buffalo offense. And, again, as Steve said, do you lean on Shady, as they have done for a couple of years? Do you implement a quick, short passing game? Do you go deep, Josh Allen, with his big arm, or do you got something else in mind? Give us a call. We'd love to discuss with you. Of course, we can discuss on Twitter, but we'd love to hear you on the phone. I got to say, you certainly want to lean on McCoy. I mean, he is your best player, again. And until, you know, he's going to be 30, until he officially slows down, I continue to lean on him. But I guess my question is, Steve, I don't know if I want to lean on him, focus on the run as much as the Bills have the last couple of years. I'd like to see them do the next two things, have a quick, short passing game and go deep once in a while, too. I don't think they can survive offensively with the 31st-ranked passing attack in the NFL. They've been that way the last 2 years. I don't think they can keep winning. They won 9 last year. I don't think they can do that effectively if the passing game doesn't come around. And you don't want to totally open it up. You don't want to be the aerial circus here, because you're either going to have a rookie starting a quarterback, talented rookie, or a guy who's only had 4 NFL starts in A.J. McCarron, or maybe Nathan Peterman, who's got 2 NFL starts. So you don't want to lean on the quarterback, but they've got to get better through the air. You can't thrive. You can't do it again, expect success, if you're second to last in passing offense. And it will require a little bit of the short game and a little bit of the deep game, too. So I don't know where I would vote in our Twitter poll, but that's what I would say, what I believe the offense should look like. Definitely keep feeding Shady McCoy. I mean, we talked about this. Who's going to – Shady was the leading receiver on the roster last year, right? 59 yeah. catches.
Who should lead it this year?
Who should lead it this year? Is it McCoy again? Is it Charles Clay, who was second last year? How about a wide receiver? How about Calvin Benjamin? How about Zay Jones? If something like that should happen, I think that makes the whole picture a little bit different and maybe leads to more success if they're able to involve the wide receivers and have an effective passing game, which they have not had for a couple of years.
I agree. Then the quarterback, and from Bills and Mets fan on Twitter, he says, the quarterbacks are unproven. Shady's getting fitted for a gold jacket. Take a ride on the Shady train. He was healthy last year. I expect the same. He's a rare elite talent. He'll give either QB time to grow. And let's face it, the QBs are question mark, no question, no doubt. And they made that move away from Tyrod Taylor because of the 31st passing attack that you mentioned. They got to get better, and they figure they got to make the move to make it happen. And that's one of the reasons their running game has been so good, because they had to have it. They had to make it work, and they just stuck with it through thick and thin. Whether it was productive or unproductive, they were still handing the football off. And let's face it, LeSean McCoy shined in that offense. And I expect him to do the same this year. I think I agree with you. He's an elite talent, has been for a long time. He's been somebody they can depend on, and I think they're going to continue to do that. He is the one guy that scares you about this offense.
And you got to feed him, but you might not have to feed him as much as they have and focus on him as much as they have. And I'd rather see somebody other than McCoy lead the team in receptions, to be quite honest. You know, he is 30, and yes, he was extremely healthy last year, made it through the year healthy. But, you know, you are running into the age issue, whether you care to acknowledge or not, and you can't keep giving him the ball and expect that he won't feel it. I think they have to come up with some different options, not necessarily better, because it'll be hard to find a better offensive option than LeSean McCoy, but some different options in the passing game in particular. A tweet from the tweet sheet from Brian Klein says, I'd love to see the Bills offense lean on Shady and then try to play to the strengths of our wide receiver core. Fades and jump balls to Calvin Benjamin, short and intermediate routes to Zay in the slot. There you go.
Yeah.
I like that plan. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of people that have, and I some in the national media, some here locally, and of course on Twitter you get that a lot, that they are really, really down on the Bills wide receivers. They just don't think they're quality enough at this point to do it. Jeremy Curley didn't change that. The two draft picks with Austin Prohl and Ray McLeod, they just don't believe in this. They think there's just too many question marks. They really don't have a lot of faith in this wide receiving core. Me, on the other hand, I played it a little bit. I played it 6 days a week when I was on the team, and I covered kicks on Sundays in the game. I've seen a lot of players who need the opportunity. Kelvin Benjamin, I think, is a quality wideout in the NFL. There's no question about it. Now, he is not a fast guy, but if you've ever seen a game from the sidelines, he is enormous. He's 6'5", all of 6'5". He's a big, heavy dude. He's like a big tight end playing wide out. He's got a huge catch radius. He really helped him win the game. His presence was the difference in the Colt game last year in the snow because he could pull those deep balls in. You saw the catch in New England that should have been a touchdown, wasn't a touchdown. That's the kind of receiver he can be. He gives a quarterback confidence to go in there and throw it into, you know, he's one of those guys that even when he's covered, he's not necessarily covered because he's got a big catch radius and a big body that he can use to make catches. So I'm not as down on these receiving. I think Zay Jones may take a step forward this year. I think this is a young guy who, under the tutelage of this coaching staff and this locker room culture they have, I think he's primed and could take a huge step forward. If he doesn't, given his production last year and the fact that he was a kind of a young guy trying to find it, they're going to find a guy better. They will not move away from Zay Jones unless there's a better alternative. And you know Zay Jones wants to come back and play well. So I like the spot he's in. He has some things to prove. And that's where you want players to be. So I'm not as down on this. And I know Jeremy Curley, you don't stay in the league for as long as he has without offering something to the teams you play for. So I know he's going to be a steady, dependable guy. Not spectacular, but dependable. And I think that's all these guys put together are going to give you probably more production. And I think the passing game doubtlessly is going to be more productive than it was a year ago.
Well, I hope so.
It has to be. They were 31st in the league. And let's face it, the quarterback, Tyrod, last year had trouble pulling the trigger. And even fans in the stands. I mean, I watched one of the games this year from the stands in New Era Field.
Really?
And you could just tell. People could see things that throws they expected Tyrod, the quarterback, to make. and he just wasn't making them. And it was a consistent problem, a consistent refrain from the fans throughout the year. So I think, you know, A.J. McCarron, I think Josh Allen, I think Nate Peterman, whoever you pick, are going to be able to give you more production in the passing game than Tyrod.
There's not a whole lot of experience in that group of quarterbacks. So what do we know about A.J. McCarron? Is he more willing to do that, or does he have other deficiencies in his game?
Well, he's certainly
same
not
to be said for Nathan Peterman, and we don't know about Josh Allen in the
he's
NFL.
Certainly not going to run for first downs like Tyrod. And Tyrod, once or twice a game, you could count on him doing something important with his legs.
Yeah.
A key first down, a key scramble to make a play, a broken play, a good play out of a broken play, something like that. And one or two times a game, Tyrod would do that.
Theoretically, you won't get that from this group.
No, you won't. But you know what? You're going to get a lot more of the, hey, a simple 12-yard out turning into with a broken tackle turn into a 25-yard play, or an anticipation throw across the middle turns into a long run. You're going to get at least a couple more of those a game, if not a handful more of those a game that you didn't get with Tyrod, and that's going to turn into much more production in the passing game. Now, it won't show up in the rushing stats. It'll take away from Tyrod's contribution in the rushing game, but you're going to get way more exponential production out of that in the passing game.
Asking you a question, what should the Buffalo offense look like in 2018? You can tweet it in. You can phone it in, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can tweet it into @1BillsLive. Couple of Bills notes. Not a whole lot of news here today. Another day for the off-season conditioning program. Players, offense, defense, and their separate units working out on the field. And there was a report from Ian Rappaport that came out in mid-morning. The Bills reportedly are having a veteran running back in for a visit. Kenyon Barner, who played for the Philadelphia Eagles, just 16 rushes, 57 yards, and a touchdown, 5 pass receptions for 56 yards last season during the regular season. He also is a kick return man, and maybe that's what the Bills are looking at. Barner with 10 kick returns and 27 punt returns for the Eagles last year. You know, the Bills, Brandon Tate is gone now. Maybe Kenyon Barner comes here as a possible return specialist. Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, and he's also the type of back, when you're watching him, we just having a couple of highlights play here. He runs with the same kind of style and moves and catches the ball a little bit like Shady. I mean, he's that kind of back. He's not a huge power back, but a more, you know, shifty, out-of-the-backfield kind of guy. So maybe that'll fit more in their offense and make him a little more consistent out of the backfield, although – you know, last year they went with Mike Tolbert, who was a completely different kind of complimentary back. So we'll see.
So that's all we know about that. Just a report from Ian Rappaport. We know this, too. Individual game tickets are now on sale for the upcoming season. So if you got a game in mind, we talked about it yesterday, one game that you may have targeted, now's your chance. Individual game tickets now on sale to the general public. The Bills are also selling group tickets of 12 or more as of today. You can call the Bills ticket office at 877-228-4257, or you can go to buffalobills.com. And I guess we saw this last week on the internal mail. It's out there now. This is significant, I think, Steve, especially when you consider where the Bills have been. For the first time in the history of the franchise, the Bills have 50,000 season ticket members for the fourth consecutive season. Now, think about it. You played on 4, 5, 6 really good teams in the 90s. They never had 4 consecutive seasons with 50,000 season ticket holders, season ticket members. This year, they do. This is the fourth consecutive year of 50,000 season ticket members. Again, a testimony to the great fans of this franchise who weathered the storm, obviously got a bit of a reprieve last year with the playoff berth and the playoff drought ending. But really, what a great testament to the great support that the Bills get here. And you know that you played here, you live here. You got one of the largest stadiums in the league and one of the smallest markets. And it makes the incentive for buying a season ticket a little bit problematical for some. Like, why? I don't need to buy a season ticket to ensure that I can get to this game or that game.
Right.
In some places, if you want to go to a game or two, you need season tickets. Not the case here because the stadium's so big. I really think that's a great testament to Bills fans.
I remember saying this last year just at the end of the preseason about what we thought the team was going to do. And I remember saying, listen, I don't know how many games they're going to win this year, meaning last year when they got to the playoffs. But I know this. I think at the end of the year, it's going to be a team that people are really going to jump on board with and like. They're going to respect the players. They're going to like the vibe coming out of there. And it's going to be a team that's going to be very easy to fall in love with and root for. And it's exactly what happened. And I think that now, that's even carried over. there's a lot of goodwill towards – this is the first time that after 1 year of one of these new head – we've had – how many head coaches have we had since 2000, right?
Yeah.
It's the first time when this – the head coach after his first year has enhanced his reputation and his likability and his respect in the community. I think it's the first time when a coach after the first year as a Buffalo Bills coach has really upped the ante – for what people expect him to do, you know, raised expectations. Hmm. I don't know that I can say it about all the guys. I can't remember all the coaches and teams, but
right, because I was just thinking like Chuck Knox probably had that impact. Yeah, Marv probably had that impact.
Right, but you know, even Marv, I mean, we had a slow start, you know, and it was his first full year was the strike year, you know, and we didn't make the playoffs in '87 either. But I think you get to the point where the vibe that surrounds this team, what happened last year, the leadership and the players, the type of players they kept and promoted and cultivated, as opposed to the players that they traded, great players they traded and got rid of and for whatever they could get, I think people are on board with that philosophy. And they got rewarded with a playoff berth. So I think it was twofold the amount of goodwill and respect they garnered in that one season. I thought it could not have gone better for the franchise last year. I think that 50,000 season ticket mark, I think that's my take on why it's fourth year in a row, and I think it's going to sustain it is because of what they're doing now and what they've done in the last 12 or 13 months.
No question. People have a good feeling about this leadership group. I also think NFL is wildly popular. And despite what people talk about TV ratings down slightly on some primetime games. Boy, you can't find that really to be the case, I don't think, if you look into it. I mean, four straight years, 50,000 season ticket members for the Buffalo Bills, and one playoff appearance in the previous 3 years. I think the league is wildly popular. I think people love the experience, love the game, and I think that's good. It's good for us, good for us.
I've heard, too, that you hear the research, and believe me, they slice the data every which way, but they also know that I've heard some philosophies about why the ratings were down or whatever, and that the one philosophy said, listen, the ratings were down everywhere. All primetime viewing was down from a year ago, including
television, not football.
Television. Yeah. Television, even for regular programming, for sitcoms and reality shows and all of that, everything was down because people are starting to watch it on their phones. They're starting to watch it on their laptops or their surfaces or their tablets. People are carrying it around with them so it doesn't go on the ratings. So they quantify that in a different way. So while people are still watching, they're watching it in more and more different ways with different venues than they are just on regular broadcast TV. And so they surmised or conjectured that was one reason the ratings were down. Maybe the people were still watching, but not on the old-fashioned airwaves like they used to. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it kind of makes sense to me because I know, man, you walk around, everybody's watching games on their phones and their tablets.
Do you watch games on your phone?
Yeah. You know what? When I watch games, the only time I watch games, I watch them recorded when I'm getting, if I'm an analyst, I'm getting ready for the game, I'm watching film on my computer.
Yeah. On your phone, though?
No. I will watch games on my phone when I'm going from a game I just did and I want to catch the end of the Bills game. If I'm not doing the Bills game, I'll catch it on my phone on the way to the airport.
Donald Jones and I used to have that discussion. He, again, different generation. He had no problem. He had a little bigger phone than this, but no problem watching games on his phone. He thought that was a way to go.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't see.
I know.
Can you?
I'm an old. I'm with you.
I don't mind sounding old about that. I don't see the game as well on my phone as I do on a screen, on a big screen.
You can't. And also, for me, I'll have it on a laptop like the one in front of me, like a 17, 16-inch laptop, and I'll cast it from my laptop to the TV so I can watch it on a big screen, even if it's 20
feet
away.
It's a better game when it's big
screen. I like it better that way. It's just me. But I'm with you, younger generation, they just pop it up and hold it in their hand.
Whatever. Whatever you want to do.
Whippersnappers.
Yeah. Hey, we're talking about the Buffalo offense. What would it look like on your phone?
Get off my lawn.
In the upcoming season. What will the Buffalo offense, will it be a heavy, shady, McCoy again? Will it be short passing, long passing? What do you think? We'll get some phone calls on this at 803-0550, and we'll take your votes on our Twitter poll at One Bills Live. Coming up next, though, when we return, Marshall Newhouse, Bills offensive lineman, in for the offseason conditioning program. He'll be live in studio with us when we return. Steve Tasker and I just getting started in Orchard Park. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, coming to you from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with John Murphy. We're talking about the Buffalo Bills and their offseason workouts. We're joined by free agent tackle Marshall Newhouse. Marshall Newhouse was a rookie with Green Bay when they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Super Bowl 45. He's been with Cincinnati, the New York Giants. Last year you were with Oakland. And I was asking you how the transition's going. I was asking you if you knew any of the guys on the roster before you got here, and you did know a couple of guys.
Yeah, I played actually when it came in as a freshman in college with Jerry Hughes, went to TCU together. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun. Aaron Green, Jeremy Curley, and then I played a year with Russ Bodine in Cincinnati. So a couple guys I knew.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. You guys, has it been rough couple of weeks or just a little conditioning?
No.
Not breaking rocks with a hammer.
No, nothing rough. Just working out, kind of building some camaraderie, competing, guys getting better. So, you know, it's been good.
Talk to us a little bit about the philosophy that you've seen here in the locker room. What, you know, you've been on four different teams coming into this one. Give this team a quick personality in contrast to maybe some of the other teams you've been on.
Well, I think Coach McDermott has preached, responsibility, accountability, and just like being disciplined. I mean, not beating yourselves. So that starts from, you know, how you treat the staff. That starts from how you handle yourself in the weight room and meetings and stuff like that. And so to some people that might seem like a given, but you've got to start your own culture. And so that's kind of what he's doing here, and I think it'll pay dividends.
Well, the four prior stops you had in the NFL, didn't they all say something similar, though? Like,
yeah, everyone's got their own twist on it. You know, the guys have a different culture. I've been places where it's a little more laid back, places a little more aggressive. So it just depends. And then every place I've been, we've won. So it's just, there's all different kind of ways to skin a cat. So it's just everybody's preference.
Now, did you have any other teams that you were interested in? You've been a free agent. Talk a little bit about what that was like for you this year and what other teams you might have been considering.
Yeah, I mean, I'd gone through it a few times, but I had been talking to a few other teams. When I got released, it was kind of a weird period where I had to kind of wait a little bit. We were waiting on the combine. We were waiting on kind of that first wave of big signings.
Right.
So there was just things you had to wait out, but then my space kind of came, and I got a few visits lined up. Buffalo was one of them. I came here, and like Coach Castillo, like Coach McDermott and things they were doing here, and figured this was a good place to be. So that process is at times fun, at times very stressful, but I'm lucky to have landed here.
So after being on those other teams and, you know, having kind of a career that's, you know, you're a pro football player now.
Right.
Talk a little bit about the philosophy and the techniques that maybe – Castillo, your offensive line coach here, talks about and how it's maybe varies or maybe it's similar to some of the other systems you've been in.
Yeah. I'm in year nine and have been with, you know, five different offensive line coaches. I mean, each guy has their own way. I mean, especially offensive line. So it's a technique-heavy position. So from team to team, you know, there's guys who emphasize getting your feet there, so guys who emphasize hands, guys who emphasize both, guys who are, they want just the more grit type of player. So all different styles. But, yeah, Coach Castillo's, I mean, from him competing with some of the team-building stuff we're doing, you can see he's just a fiery guy, and I think players follow kind of what their coach, his personality. And if that has any indication, I think we're going to be a pretty salty group. He definitely likes aggressive. He likes to use your hands and likes to finish in the run game. So those are all good things I think will lead to success.
Yeah, it's interesting. They have different kind of ways to describe offensive linemen, like you got to be gritty and a fighter, or you're a thinker kind of thing.
Right.
Or you're a technique guy, or you're a physical talent guy.
It's the whole board of descriptors, and coaches, you know, value different things. But at the end of the day, it's about playing football and winning. So,
talk a little bit. How much have you been exposed to the whole offense? I mean, Brian Daboll's a new offensive coordinator here in Buffalo. We don't know what the offense is going to look like.
Right.
Because he's going to have, you know, a bunch of new guys up front like you. And then he's got some skill position guys that are going to be sprinkled in as well. And who knows what the quarterback's going to be like. We haven't seen any of those guys play yet either.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot up in the air. I mean, Coach Daboll has a – a pretty good resume. And just from the start, you know, we're going to be a matchup. We're going to type offense. We're going to be an aggressive, can do a lot of different things well offense. We can go fast. We can take our time. We can do a lot of things up at the line. He's going to ask a lot of our quarterbacks, but he's asking a lot of everyone else. I mean, I imagine all the terms and techniques and stuff, he threw them in a bucket and then just threw the bucket out on the floor the first day. Right. He's like, guys, I need you to learn this. We need to know this in and out, and then we're applying it on the field when we get to go outside. And so this is just the beginning. I think things will start to get more ingrained in guys. They'll start to get more comfortable, and I think we'll start to see what it's going to look like. But, there, yeah, a lot up in the air. You know, outside of Shady, there's just not a ton of continuity. I mean, you've got new piece on the line, new receiving core, all that stuff, but – with reps and with time, I think those things will start to come together.
With Marshall Newhouse, Bills offensive lineman, free agent signee back in March. You mentioned how every place you've gone in the NFL, you've won. That includes your rookie year. You went to Green Bay and were part of a Super Bowl team. What was that experience like, and what did that teach you about how to approach life in the NFL?
I mean, that was incredible. I mean, but to put it simply, it just you realized even then, even though that was the whirlwind of your rookie year coming from your last college game to all the – draft prep, yeah. All-star games, combine, is a long year. But even after the end of that year, which was February, after the Super Bowl, you realize this is dang hard. Uh-huh. This is a long grind. There was a lot of, like, adversity. I think that team, we were a game. We had a lucky break, a game of not away from not making the playoffs. And then next thing you know, we go on this crazy run and we're Super Bowl champs. So you learn, yeah, it's really hard, A, get in the playoffs, B, a winning team, and then – getting the Super Bowl, but you realize you all the things you work for start in April, and then you just want to get a chance at the playoffs. You want to get a shot and making a run.
What's it like playing with Aaron Rodgers? What sort of a leader was he on that team?
He's a great leader. It was a lot of fun. Demanded a lot from guys and was fiery and competitive and brought the best out of people. It was a lot of fun. And then sometimes we'd do everything we needed to do, and then you wouldn't sit back and watch him, but then you'd just marvel at some of the stuff he did, given, you know, certain crazy situations. And he's still doing it to this day, using his arm, using his brain, using his feet, that people kind of sleep on him a little bit. So he's got all the tools, and he's showing it every day.
So you went to Green Bay as a rookie, then you were in Cincinnati, then with the Giants,
yes,
and then Oakland. So you've been in the largest market, New York, and then you started in Green Bay. So you've been a large,
smallest.
You've been in Buffalo. You know, how have you found this city to be? For you and your taste, and have you gotten out to go out and enjoy it a little bit?
Yeah, it's been great. I would compare it to – it's a little bigger than Green Bay, it's, you know, but it's got a, you know, great fan base. People love the team. That's kind of – that we've got here, then you got the Sabres, but there's not a lot other sports-wise to narrow in on. So people just really love and are attached to Bills. You know, you've got the whole Bills Mafia thing and the fans on game day, so that's been awesome. And, yeah, the city is a slower, quieter town, but – That kind of lends itself to me. I'm from Texas, you know. Even though I'm from Dallas, I prefer things to be a little slower. You know, New York at times could get overwhelming, but Buffalo has been great to me so far. Everyone's been incredible, and I'm looking forward to when football season gets here and things kind of ramp up.
Hey, Marshall, other than finding a job this offseason, what did you do during the offseason? How did you spend your downtime?
I mean, the last few years of my career has been just figuring out what life was going to look like after football. And for a lot of guys, they kind of wait a little too late and they fail to realize how short this is in the lifetime of your life, your career. You know, the average is 3 years, and I've been fortunate enough now to be in my ninth, but the last 4.5 years I've been thinking about what's next. And so that comes with kind of applying myself, getting out of my comfort zone, finding things that I'm passionate about. And for me, it's been entrepreneurship and business, tech, kind of investing, all those things. And so I went to CES, was like a trade show in Vegas for the tech world. I mean, all the most innovative things you see right there in front of you is kind of this crazy week-long thing in Vegas of all places. That was a lot of fun. I went to the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, did a lot of networking there, did some saw some interactive things, you know, some virtual reality, some cool stuff, and then met a lot of great people, making a lot of connections. And that's another thing you realize is just – these people that you meet while you're in the NFL, it's a great door that'll be to be open while you're playing, but sometimes those doors close when you're done. So capitalizing on where I am right now and just building genuine relationships that'll carry with me when I'm done playing.
What was one of the interesting things you saw at the tech conference there? I mean, what are some of the new cutting-edge technologies? I mean, because the best part about technology is sometimes it affects your everyday life.
Absolutely.
Like everybody's carrying around a phone now. And
yeah, totally.
What's some of the things that are on the horizon?
I mean, you know, there were parts where I was specifically in like the sports tech, the health tech right. stuff, because that directly applies to me, and that was a lot of fun. But just seeing how much stuff, the wearable stuff that they're doing for people now, and in the NFL, we've got some of that on us right now. We've got right. the GPS, we've right. got the monitoring stuff,
and finding
more and more about your body. I mean, guys will continue to get healthier and play longer, have better careers because they know more about their body. They know more about, even from their diet, like, hey, I know that this – you know, this type of food inflames me. And, you know, in football, after you're beat up after a game, the thing you're trying to get rid of is inflammation. So little things like that, from a wristband that can tell you all kind of different things. I mean, there's an incredible amount of stuff. And it's encouraging because a lot of that stuff is going to help us directly. So that kind of intrigued me.
Yeah. I mentioned this, I think it was to Lorenzo Alexander last week. And, we just walked through the field house, but I don't know if you guys have 100% attendance at these voluntary workouts, but it looks like it. I mean, everybody's here, right?
Yeah, we've got quite a few guys. I mean, that doesn't happen everywhere, but I think that's a testament to Coach McDermott and the kind of culture they're trying to build here, guys wanting to be around, get to know each other, get dialed in on the offense and or defense, and get kind of the ball rolling because, you know, OTAs will be here before you know it, then training camp will be here before you know it. And so every little day that you can – get ahead, it will help you in the long run.
Yeah, it was interesting. I stuck my head out the side door for just a minute. They were out on the field. There's like two full fields out there. They were covering every corner of it with different drills and this and that going on. I mean, it looked like football for the first time. So I saw you guys out there throwing medicine balls around and jumping right, and stepping right. over hurdles yeah. and going through the little tire drills and the step ladders. For the first time, you go out there and it starts to look like a sport.
Yeah. I mean, this phase two has kind of allowed us to kind of get into more football stuff. There's still not, you know, people across from you contact per the CBA. But, the whole team warming up together and then kind of dispersing, doing our individual, some guys doing special teams. That's what practice and football will look more like as we get going. So everyone getting accustomed to that routine is going to be beneficial.
Before we let you go, I want you to, if you would, participate. It's our Twitter poll. But who better to ask than a guy who's on the offense? We're asking fans today, you know, there's a new quarterback, new offensive coordinator, new plan, new system. What should the Bills offense look like? And we offered a couple of suggestions on Twitter. 35%, 36% of respondents so far say, open it up, go deep. 36% say, lean on Shady.
All right.
23% say, let's have a quick, short passing game. 5% have something else. Which way would you go if you were in charge?
I mean, to be completely honest with you, I mean, from the offense they've installed so far, all three of those are going to be things that we can do. And do well, and it's, you know, it's not about it's about being, you know, mastering things and not just being a jack of all trades, master none. We want to be really, really good at a lot of different things. So having Shady in your back pocket, matching up on linebackers or out on the edge will be something. A short, quick pass game to get the ball in some of our quicker receivers' hands, and then going deep to a guy like KB. We're going to be able to do all those things, and so Coach Daboll's, you know, taking that to us, and it's on us to learn the offense and start to execute. But I have full confidence that those will be all three of those things will be strong at come season time.
That's good to hear. Yeah. I look forward to watching that.
Absolutely.
So I got to ask you last one for me.
Sure.
You got this. You come in. Is this fun coming in and being with all these guys? Because it's sunny out. It's a warm day.
Right.
Let's face it. You're in your 20s. Right? You're like young and in shape. It's kind of fun going out there because really there's no scoreboard to worry about.
Right.
You're not trying to win a game. You don't have to get ready for a game plan. You're just kind of getting to know guys and seeing in shape and kind of feeling each other out and. It's got to be kind of fun. I mean, because this is kind of the easy part of the year.
Yeah, I mean, this is just what people, you know, guys like. It's running, lifting, and being with your teammates.
Right.
I mean, this is a good part. We're getting to know each other and competing in the weight room and on the field, and everybody's getting stronger and just having a good time. And then you're done by 1, 2, or 3. I'm an old guy, so I stick around a little longer. I got to take care of my body, but yeah, it's quick in and out, it's something that. You know, it's a little less stressful overall than this when the season comes.
It's like being in your favorite pub. Instead of drinking, you're working out.
Something like that. Yeah,
guys,
okay,
right?
I'll take
that's
that.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
You sure that's your favorite pub?
Yeah, you know what I mean.
I got it. Marshall, thanks for this.
Appreciate
it. Thank you guys.
Thanks Marshall Newhouse, Bills offensive lineman in studio with us. Steve and I back with more in a moment. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. One Bills Live is the name of the show. John Murphy and Steve Tasker here until 3. Our thanks again to Marshall Newhouse, Bills offensive lineman. A tweet from David Zwartz who says, Marshall has a future in TV and radio. The guy can talk. He's right. We were just talking about
really
that.
Articulate.
We got to find a role for him to come here.
We got
to
get him
basis.
In once a week during the season, right?
Yeah, if we can. Yeah, let him know
we'll
that, you know, there's no compensation for it. But yeah,
it's
Marshall, how'd you like to build your resume?
Right. We could come in, come in and talk about his favorite tech item that he's seen on the, you know, something. We could have him comment on something that we find on the internet. You know,
can I read one more tweet to you? This is not on topic. I know we're going to get to the tweet sheet.
Let's hear it.
This is a good point. We're talking about 50,000 season ticket members this year, fourth consecutive year. I didn't think of this, but he's right. Jonathan Reddy. The Bills drew 50,000 season ticket holders every year since the Pegulas bought them. I think they had an impact on season tickets. That's a really good point. I never thought of that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
the certainty of the team staying here, right, is the biggest factor. The fact that people, I think, generally like what the Pegulas have done with the Bills and everything else. That's a really good point, Jonathan Reddy. I never thought of that, but he's right. Four straight years, four Pegula years.
And I think there's a lot of. Let's don't forget, man, how thankful and relieved were people when the Pegulas bought the Bills and all that went away.
Yeah,
and they knew that it was a hometown owner, and people jumped on board. And let's face it, it was a huge, huge boon for Buffalo and the Bills organization when that happened. And that may have some. That may be the main reason why they've been above that threshold for four straight years.
Never thought of that. We want to get back into our topic of the day, a couple of minutes left in this hour. And the topic is, what will the Bills' offense look like? You got a couple of tweets on that particular topic, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. From Shooter McGavin, Josh Allen and the J-Gun offense. That's all he wants. He wants no huddle. Let's go. That's from from Shooter McGavin. And also from Trade Up Jack, he says, other. I want a forward-thinking offense that utilizes some college-type plays and still uses Shady as a runner and a receiver, but also incorporates some RPOs and quick slants and will take a few shots deep per game. Though we may not have the speed of receiver to get deep at the right now, he says. That's from Trade Up Jack. And that's right. You got to have – I think we spoke about that with Marshall Newhouse, who was just on the show with us. You do need an offense that you can win with a number of different ways. If you have to run this week and be a running team this week to beat that team, you got to do it. If you got to play big on the outside and you got to throw the ball outside the numbers to win this week, you got to be able to do that. If you got to win with defense one week, you got to do that. So I think that's what you're shooting for, because it's a league about matchups. How your team meshes with your opponent, where their strengths are, where your strengths are, and how your weaknesses offset each other. You got to win a different way every week. It's hard to go out like back in the old 1980s with Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow and all those guys, Charlie Joyner and those guys, and air it out every week. You got to be able to do it a lot of different ways. And I think we're hearing a little bit of that from the Twitter poll.
Going back a couple of tweets, Shooter McGavin tweet about Josh Allen and the J-Gun offense. That is funny. But speaking of Marshall Newhouse, did you hear him say how Coach Daboll has asked them to be ready to pick up the pace, to be ready to go fast? He said, we can go fast, we can go slow. They want, as you say, they want to be versatile, you know. They want to be able to throw a different look at the opponents on a weekly basis, including speeding it up a little bit. They were not a really great no-huddle, fast-paced offense the last few years.
Yeah, and I think that's part of they always use this analogy, and it's really true. It's one tool in your toolbox. You got to have the ability to go no huddle, fast paced, have your quarterback calling the plays at the line, quick snapping the ball, and getting the ball out of his hands. You got to have the willingness to do that. But you also got to be ready to go three tight ends, one running back or two running backs, and hand it off and grind it out and use every minute of the play clock and go into a four-minute offense and guard a three-point lead at the end. You got to have all the personnel and the ability to be successful in all those phases of your game. To win on a consistent basis. And, you know, you'd love to be able to do that. But let's face it, this is a team in years past that hasn't been able to throw it to win. And that's something I think every team needs to be able to do. And the Bills have not been able to do that.
What should the Buffalo offense look like? That's our topic today. We'll get back into that. What did Josh Allen's offense look like last year and the year before that? That's what we're going to discuss when we come right back. Brent Vegan is associate head coach, offensive coordinator the last few years at University of Wyoming. He was the OC for Josh Allen. We'll talk with him live on the line when we return. Steve and I here until 3. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. update comes from One Bills Drive. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network says the Bills are spending time today with a free agent visit. Running back Kenyon Barner from the Philadelphia Eagles. Barner limited action at the running back spot for Philadelphia last year. 16 carries, 57 yards, one touchdown, caught five passes. But it was a premier kick return man. 10 kickoffs, 27 punt returns for the Eagles. Bills may be looking to find a replacement for Brandon Tate, who was their return specialist last year and left in free agency. The Bills spending time with Kenyon Barner, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. The Bills veterans spending time on the field today. Another day of the offseason conditioning program with rookies headed to town. They'll be here on the field on Friday. For the first time in the history of the Bills franchise, the team has 50,000 season ticket members for four consecutive years. That announcement came from the Bills today. Individual game tickets are on sale now for the Bills. You can go to the website, buffalobills.com, for information. Around the NFL, the Carolina Panthers have signed veteran running back C.J. Anderson to a one-year deal. He'll compete with Cameron Artis Payne for the backup role behind Christian McCaffrey. Last year's first-round pick, Carolina released Jonathan Stewart, the franchise-leading rusher during the offseason, leaving a vacancy there. Anderson just cut by the Denver Broncos last week. And the Saints have released tight end Kobe Fleener just 2 years into his contract. Fleener caught only 22 passes for 295 yards and two touchdowns in 11 games last year, finished last year on injured reserve. Hockey news, former Carolina Hurricanes team captain Rod Brind'Amour has been promoted to head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. The announcement expected later this week. He was the captain of the Canes' only Stanley Cup championship team in 2006. The Washington Capitals advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals with their 2-1 win over the Penguins, game six of their second round last night in Pittsburgh. Alex Ovechkin set up the game-winning goal for the Caps in that game. And baseball, the Yankees and Red Sox are going to play each other in two regular season games in London next year. That's pretty interesting. We'll talk about that. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. As we said, the rookies arrive here Thursday night, hit the field Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It'll be our first chance to get a look at Bills' first-round draft pick, Josh Allen, the Wyoming quarterback. On the line with us, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who has had extensive experience watching Josh Allen. He is an assistant coach in college football for 20 years, former offensive coordinator, quarterback coach at North Dakota State, and for the last 4 years, the associate head coach and offensive coordinator at the University of Wyoming. He was Josh Allen's offensive coordinator. Happy to have Brent Vegan on the line with us. Brent, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
What are we getting? Simply put, what are we getting when we get Josh Allen here later this week?
Well, I think the first thing that will jump out, you know, I think is he's obviously a very physically gifted young man. There's a reason he was considered at the top of the draft and ultimately picked seventh. But beyond that, I think as people get to know him in the Buffalo area, you know, I think a guy that's extremely committed, is a very hard worker, has the ability to learn, and, you know, above all, is probably, you know, extremely competitive, and that's something that serves him probably as well as that talent does.
Brent, you know, when as I read about Josh, and you guys had him for a couple of years out of a junior college, a small junior college in Northern California, the thing that stands out is his stature, obviously one big thing. But when you got him, he wasn't that big, right? He was skinny. He put on a lot of bulk in the time he spent at Wyoming, huh?
Yeah, you know, when he got to us, I think it would have been January of 2015, he was about 205 pounds. 6'4", 205, you know, and that was a significant growth from the time he was a high school senior. So his growth really happened kind of after the fall of his senior year, and it was pretty steady. But, yeah, he put on about 30 pounds and really kind of reshaped his body. He was, not very physically conditioned, fit, whatever you want to say, 205, 210 pounds when he got. So he worked really hard. That was the first time, you know, he really – focused on, you know, what it takes to train to be a football player. And, you know, after having been a basketball, baseball, you know, he wasn't a big weight room guy necessarily, but the weight room really took to him as he took to it in his first couple years with us.
Brent, talk to us a little bit about what kind of coach did he like to be coached? I mean, how did he accept that? I know he seems to be a really bright kid. Does that show up in the classroom? And what did he have a good attitude about being criticized by a coaching staff or being coached up?
Yeah, I think he's a very coachable young man. By no means, you know, he is he a guy that thinks he's got all the answers. I think he's always looking for feedback. I think he's confident in his knowledge, but at the same time, can be criticized, can be coached, and wants to learn, and is certainly capable of learning. So I think, that's a developing situation for him. I mean, he was kind of an untapped guy playing small town or, high school ball in California, then moving along to a smaller junior college, like you noted, and then, coming to us and growing in that regard, over the 3 years we had him, and then, setting himself up well to continue to be that same type of learner and coachable young man when he goes to the NFL.
You know, everybody up here in Buffalo has heard, this guy, Josh Allen. He's a big, strong arm young guy from a college that, kind of nobody knows about around Buffalo. And they're trying to make these comparisons to Carson Wentz. Now, you've had, you've rubbed up against both those guys. Are there comparisons to be made, or are they both individuals? I mean, tell us about, why people are trying to make that comparison. Obviously, they want Josh Allen to be everything that Carson Wentz was this past year as an MVP candidate in the NFL and a young quarterback. But what's your take on all of that?
Well, I think the physical similarities are striking. I think their combine numbers were almost exactly comparable. I think their stories in some ways are things that you can draw some comparisons. They both come from, great families, places that are off the radar, Bismarck, North Dakota in Carson's case, and Feuerbach, California in Josh's case. They were late bloomers as far as their growth. I think if they were put side by side as high school sophomores, you'd never guess that these two kids would ultimately be first round picks. They're three sport kids, so they were always competing. And I think there's that competitive desire that they both hold. It's something that, can't be slighted. And I think they both have a great desire to prove people wrong, to be everything they can. I know that, Josh getting picked, the first round is not going to change the way he still sees himself as a guy that many people doubt. And I think that certainly helps. I think there's a lot of similarities. Their stories are similar. I think the fact that they come out of a system that, is rooted in the same place, even though it's two different schools, I think helps them. Now, Carson's gone out and proved it over his first 2 years, and that's in front of Josh. I think he's learned from watching Josh, and I think that's sort of.
No, the phone's cutting out a couple times. I'll tell you what, let's reconnect with Brent if we can. Because I got a couple more questions for him, but some interesting stuff there. And I didn't know their combine numbers, Carson Wentz and Josh Allen's, were pretty similar.
Well, yeah, and the thing that got me about Josh Allen's combine numbers were the Wunderlich test. Yeah. He tested as the most intelligent quarterback of that crew that was going to get drafted. And that goes a long way because, like I told you earlier, smart guys get better.
Mm-hmm.
They always improve because it's part of their makeup. They know that's why they're there. They're there to get better. And they have the intelligence to do it. Now we've got Brent Vegan back on the line. Brent, sorry we lost you for just a moment. Go ahead. And we were just finishing up talking about, the similarities between Josh Allen and Carson Wentz and how their stories are somewhat similar. And obviously it's impossible to say if Josh Allen is going to grow into the same kind of quarterback that Carson Wentz is. But you do see some similarities there, and the rest is just yet to be seen, correct?
Yeah, I think Carson's success in these first 2 years, I think one thing proves that you can come from this unheralded situation and become an elite quarterback in the NFL. And he's certainly not the first one, but it doesn't happen too often. And I think, Josh has been able to learn from Carson kind of through us. They've had conversations in the past, and I think, as much about how to play on the field, but just how to go about being a professional, how to take in the details, how to prepare. I think those are the things that separate the good from the great in that league, is just it's the things off the field. And I know Josh has to prove those things, but I know in Carson, kind of from a distance, he certainly had a guy to look up to and emulate. And ideally be able to follow in his footsteps.
With Brent Vegan, he is offensive coordinator, University of Wyoming. Josh Allen's offensive coordinator. Hey, Brent, I wonder, can you tell us what about Josh Allen's upbringing, on a farm in Central Valley there in California, in Fireball, California? What about that informs the kind of person he is, the kind of football player he is, if anything?
Well, I had a great family, and I know it's several generations that have farmed that land, and now Josh was able to play sports. He didn't have to make a choice between playing sports and working on the farm, but I know he worked. Example that his father laid down is just how you go about your business, how you work. You value the work that you put in, and you're humble about it. And I think those roots, and then coming to a place like Wyoming and seeing the way the people are, and now off the Buffalo, I think there's a lot of comparisons that can be made from one place to the next, and ultimately out to Buffalo, even though we're talking about three completely different places in the United States.
And I wonder too, Brent. You're with him at Wyoming a couple of years, and you're, of course, spent a lot of time with him, but you are limited in how much time you can spend with one of your players, NCAA regulations. So what do you think Josh got from his three-month stint with Jordan Palmer? What did he think he went there to work on, and what do you think he came out of that with?
Well, you mentioned it. We only get to work with him so much in the offseason, and sometimes it's not that a guy like Josh needs to be reshaped or anything like that, but just being able to work on a day in, day out basis to gain a level of consistency on the things that that maybe were a little inconsistent with his game. So I know they studied his film quite a bit and saw some things that could be worked on. And I know it's been well documented, mostly probably footwork wise, but I think that was part of it certainly to allow Josh to continue to improve, through this time. But then also I think Jordan's experience in a couple different systems in the NFL and exposing Josh to that, being able to learn a little bit different language from a different systems, and then, learning about, just how to approach the game from an ex-NFL guy. I think those are all very positive experiences, and I know through the process, through those months, you could really see Josh can continue to grow and mature as far as his, his preparation playing the NFL.
Talk to us a little bit about, Brent, you were the offensive coordinator. Talk a little bit about the offense you had him running at Wyoming and how he ran it and some of the things that you asked him to do that maybe surprised you and some of the things you felt you had to work on with him and kind of describe what you asked him to do as a quarterback in your offense.
Our system. He only played one game his first year, and even a full game. It was about a quarter, and he broke his collarbone. But how we would have treated him that year had he kept playing would have been a lot different than how he finished up. And that's obviously part physical and what we saw him be able to do over the years we worked with him. But then more so on the mental side of it, we huddle. Our quarterbacks make decisions at the line of scrimmage, whether that's protection-based, run game, routes, changes, those type of things. So he's having to be an extension of the coaching staff out on the field. And that there's two things that go into that. That's a ton of preparation, but then there's applying that knowledge, as that play clock's winding down. And, Josh grew tremendously in that regard, over the time he was with us. To the point where, I didn't feel like there was any limitations to what he could do mentally out on the field. From a passing game standpoint, I'd say the same thing. There's not a throw that he can't make, a throw that he wouldn't feel confident trying to make, and that really, from a play calling standpoint, it's an open book now. On the other side, you got to be able to protect, and you got to be able to get open, and that was, some of the areas we were a little bit more challenged this past year, 2017, than we maybe were in 2016. I think he's taken a brunt of that as far as completion percentage and production and all that stuff, but I know he grew I thought tremendously as a player from 2016 to 17, and you know, so much so that I felt like, you know, he was ready to make this next jump. And, you know, I think sky's the limit for him, you know, and if he's not walking into a situation where, you know, taking a snap for under center or reciting a play in the huddle or making decisions at the line of scrimmage, so there's not going to be a learning curve from that perspective. It's going to be learning a new offense and applying it, and I'm excited to see how he does.
You know, the day after he was drafted here in Buffalo, we had Coach Craig Bowl on, your head coach, Brent. He mentioned, yes, there was personnel losses from 2016 to 17, a couple of other considerations. But he also said your offense asked Josh to make some difficult throws, just kind of a different type of offense. Can you talk about that and how maybe that played into the 56% completion percentage?
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing that gets lost in all this, our run production, which is really nothing to do with Josh, dropped by over 100 yards. Wow. We had an NFL back in 2016, and, you know, we had an NFL center. You know, we lost those guys. You know, I think a lot gets made of the guys that he lost as far as throwing to, but the makeup of our offense changed. And, you know, with that the situations that you get into change, and, you know, whether that's down and distance scenarios because you're not as consistent running the ball, that was certainly part of it. You know, I think we didn't, you know, we played good defense, but you're still, you know, you're still in some cases chasing some points in some games, so that changes the situation. So, you know, I just think the degree of difficulty in playing the position this year for us was greater than the year before. And there's a lot of things that's personnel-based, that's production, you know, on the run side-based, protection-based. There's a lot of things that go into that. We were much more quarterback-dependent this year, and that's a challenging thing no matter how talented you are. And the thing about Josh is he handled it well. All he was about was, what do we have to do to win games? You know, and if that meant he had to run the ball a little bit more from play to play or from game to game, he was all about it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we won 8 of the 11 games that he played in for us. Would have liked to get those 3 games that we lost back, but, you know, that's the way the season went. But I think we were really hitting our stride, you know, when towards the end of the season, and ultimately he went down for a couple games, and that hurt us. And, you know, I couldn't be more pleased with just how he handled things this year. I mean, he obviously had a lot of opportunity, and it's played out that way at the end of this. But in the, you know, within the midst of the season, he was all about Wyoming football and all about us winning as many games as we could. And I think as a quarterback, that's a stat that matters more than anything.
Well, we'll get a chance to see him here Friday on the field with Bills rookies. Can't wait for that. Coach, thanks very much for filling us in today. We appreciate it. Love talking with you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks for having me on. Go Bills.
Thanks, Coach.
Brent Vegan is offensive coordinator at the University of Wyoming. He joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Somebody said go Bills the other day, too, some non-Bills guy.
Yeah, who was it? I can't remember. It's, hey, man, it's in everybody's heart. They got to say it somebody. You know, there's a lot in that interview. I mean,
what'd you get out of it?
Well, I was taking notes the whole time.
I know. You writing a book.
He's, and we knew, story. And we said it beforehand, he was going to talk Josh up, you know, he's his guy. But he also acknowledged some of the deficiencies that they had and some of the things that were said about Josh before he came out. Certainly, they mentioned that he came from a smaller school and a school that was at a level not with an FBS school, not an Alabama or Notre Dame or an SEC school or Pac-12 school, Big Ten school. He came from Wyoming. And he also said something I hadn't heard before. We heard that Josh Allen had played this season and his wide receivers were not the same quality of wide receivers as, you know, we would think they would have at that school or they had had in the past. But he also said they lost an NFL running back. They lost the running back to the NFL the year before and also an offensive center the year before. And they started to ask a lot of Josh Allen just because he could cover up for a lot of those deficiencies. And, you know, he says that's a lot of what he feels led him to a 56% completion percentage. And also he said the way Josh handled all that couldn't have been better. There's a lot to like about what he said about the Bills' number one draft pick.
I like I don't know why. I didn't grow up on a farm. But I like hearing stories about Josh Allen growing up on a farm, working on a farm. As Brent Vegan said, he wasn't one of those farm boys who couldn't play sports because he's so busy. But clearly, if you read some of his background, He pitched in. He was part of the farm, you know, and the physical long days, physical labor. There's a lot to be said for that. I think when you're looking for somebody to come in and work to just work, you know, keep your mouth shut and work. I think that's what farmers do.
And he also said, you know, when they in Wyoming, they huddled up. He took snaps out of from under center. They asked their quarterback to do pre-snap reads. They asked him to make checks at the line of scrimmage. They made calls at the line of scrimmage. He had to act like, now I'm not saying it was at the level of the NFL, but he had to act like he was in the NFL because that's what NFL quarterbacks do. They make pre-snap reads. They have to adjust protections. They have to do a lot of things. And when they coached him, Brent Vegan, the offensive coordinator, said, listen, we didn't think there was a throw that was impossible for him, and we asked him to make some. His wide receivers were a downgrade from the year before, and he acknowledged that they just weren't at the level they wanted them to be at, and their running game evaporated as well. So they're kind of trying to win games with Josh Allen and a good defense. And he said sometimes they were chasing points and asking him to make some pretty impossible stuff happen. And I think he thinks that affected his statistics. But when it comes down to it, Josh Allen didn't care. He just wanted to win. And that's there's a lot to like about it.
You know, I'm just in there thinking – you know, I was here when they drafted E.J. Manuel, middle of the first round. Here when they drafted J.P. Lossman, late in the first round. They haven't been a lot of first-round quarterback picks for the Bills. I can't recall ever being more excited to watch a rookie minicamp than I am this week. I just want to see this guy. I want to see him in the uniform, see how big he is. I know he's big. I want to see it for myself, number one. And I want to see him throw it. I want to see him spin it, even if it's just a couple of, throws downfield to his rookie teammates this weekend. I can't wait for that. I can't recall ever being more excited about a rookie minicamp. Steve, what does that say about me? What's lacking in my life that I care about rookie minicamp?
Nothing. You're a complete human being, Murph. You are a well-rounded. Radio host.
I feel that
for
way
for the home team. Yeah, no question. I see it as well. This is a big moment. And I think part of what gets into this mix is the fact that we saw this coaching staff and this organization overachieve a year ago with a less talented roster. And the thought, I think the prevailing thought in the Bills fan base is that they're going to do it again with this group. And if they do it with this group, it's going to be an even better team than it was a year ago. Unfortunately, you and I have been around long enough to know this. They could be a much better team than they were a year ago and win fewer games.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is in the NFL. And that's the sad part about it. But I do think this is a team and a coaching staff that is they feel that they are on track and everything has transformed according to the plan. And so, and their plan is a championship, absolutely no doubt about it. They want to get to the Super Bowl and win it, and everything has gone along actually better than I think they had thought it probably would.
What do you think? Does Josh Allen have a role to play in the Bills offense? What will the Bills offense look like? That's our Twitter poll. We've been talking about it since noon today, and we'll resume that discussion. Give us a call, 803-0550, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can participate in the Twitter poll. You can vote. What should the 2018 Buffalo offense look like? What do you think? Right now, 36% of you say, going to open it up, going to go deep with Josh Allen. I assume you mean Josh Allen. 34% say you're going to lean on Shady the way they have the last couple of years. 25% of you say looking for a quick, short passing game. 5% of you say something else.
Yeah, and I've got a tweet, probably the most well-thought-out tweet I've gotten from Evan Kay. He tweeted it at SteveTasker89. He goes, I don't think a ton needs to change with Shady's workload. The biggest difference is not having 84, 95, and 104 rush attempts by your starting quarterback. That should lead to some kind of bigger passing game, and that's what we've been harping on. That's from Evan Kay. That's a pretty good take on what this offense should look like. Shady's got to be a part of it, no question about it. He's probably going to be the engine that runs it. But without a quarterback that runs and a quarterback that really will get rid of the football and throw it and make some throws, I think this offense is going to look totally different because of that. It may be that they turn it over more, no question about it, because they did not do that very much with Tyrod Taylor. But they were so conservative as to be almost painful to watch at times. And you got to, at some point, you've got to risk it to get the reward. And I think this is an offense that's going to do that with these quarterbacks, whichever one plays.
We got time to talk about it when we come back. It is One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health, coming to you from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. One Bills Live is what we call it. We're live at One Bills Drive. Coming up at 2, Mike Sando, NFL reporter for ESPN. He went through the league, 32 teams, and got unfiltered, his word, unfiltered takes on every team's picks. Some interesting stuff about the aforementioned Josh Allen. We want to know from you about the Bills' offense. What should it look like this year? Give us a call on that. I want to take this call who is relating back to our conversation with our last guest, Brent Vegan. It is Frank on the line in Amherst. Go ahead, Frank. You're on the air.
Oh, great. Hey, guys. I was in the car listening, and my main concern was when you guys were had him on, had the quarterback coach, or I don't know if he was offensive coordinator for Wyoming.
Offensive coordinator, yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about, you know, he's a hard worker. He's big. He's physical. You know what? I get all that. But you know what? There's a lot of hard workers in the NFL. They wouldn't be there if they weren't hard workers. My main concern is I was waiting to hear the words out of his mouth, talent or skill set or words along those lines that prove that, you know, he has that ability to make those talented throws that only the elite quarterbacks could do.
Well,
so that's my main concern is, you know, you got his coach on the air, and I think his mouth.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll give you one thing, and I wrote down from the notes that I got out of that interview. He said that no throw was impossible. One of the things that the offensive coordinator said, they didn't have really great receivers, and they asked Josh to make some throws that nobody could make. But he also had the mentality also that there was no throw he couldn't make. And they asked him to make some throws that they wouldn't ask anybody else to make because they couldn't. So while you're right, he didn't use those exact words about having whatever it was, talent or a skill set or what have you. He did say the guy could make throws nobody else could make.
Right. And that's just my biggest concern about him. You know, I've seen a lot of other Bills fans coming on the draft is, you know, his accuracy, completion. And, you know, I'm just, you know, I've been a Bills fan. My first game was the the comeback game with Frank Wright.
Right.
I've been a Bills fan forever. And I just want to get them, make this a right pick. I'm very nervous and anxious at the same time to see him on the field.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just.
I hear you, Frank. I hear you.
Yeah,
you're
disagree. I mean, Frank, yeah. I mean, I just mentioned to Steve a minute ago how eager I am. I don't know if I'm nervous, but I'm eager to see him even throw the ball at rookie minicamp this weekend. But there's no guarantees here. You're right.
He's right.
And you know what else? I think it doesn't – what we say, what writers say, what draft experts say, what draft gurus say – what his coaches say, you know, as Steve pointed out before we did the interview, he's going to talk him up. You knew that. Doesn't matter. How does he do? How does he throw it? Does he win? That's what'll be the measure for Josh Allen. Anybody else?
And
I don't have that answer.
I would caution you, Frank. Don't be too caught up in what you think the guy doesn't say about Josh Allen, because there was plenty in this interview with Brent Vegan, the offensive coordinator of Wyoming, to love about Carson Wentz. He's the smartest kid. He was the smartest quarterback coming out of the draft. He's the most physically gifted, and that's a unanimous and universal opinion about every scout and every team, and everybody said the exact same thing. Every scouting report said the same thing. This guy is the most physically gifted of all the quarterbacks. That just doesn't mean he's the biggest and tallest and best athlete. It means he had the best arm and could make the throws. So their question was his completion percentage. Now, there's a ton of video that shows his wide receivers dropping balls, and there's a ton of video that shows him trying to make or being asked to make impossible throws. And the fact that their offensive coordinator is the first I've heard this, that their offense had to go totally revamped from the year before because they lost a running back that went to the NFL and they lost an offensive center that went to the NFL. And Josh Allen was the last guy standing in that offense, and they asked him to do it all. And he didn't have much help doing it. So there's a lot of reasons you can conjure up to make excuses for a 56% completion percentage. But by the same token, if you're going to pick a guy that has a 56% completion percentage, it looks like you got the guy with all the other stuff that goes with it and a lot of reasons to think like he's going to be better than that even at this next level.
I just looked up the names. I had not heard of them. They were undrafted free agents from Wyoming. Fullback Drew Van Manen and offensive lineman Ryan Cummings went to the NFL in 2017. Not big names, but still. place like Wyoming, that matters when you lose a couple of, when a couple of guys who were big parts of your offense are in the NFL the next year, you're going to miss them. At Wyoming in particular, that's not Alabama there, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big void that they've got to fill. And I think it was interesting, you know, some of the stuff that he was saying about him. And we knew, like we said, he was going to talk him up. But you love hearing it, too, because he can back it up with certain instances. He's got to, you know, Allen comes from a hardworking family, multiple generations on this farm. So you know that nobody's slacking over there. And he comes to Wyoming, a small school from middle of California, out in the rural areas, goes to a rural school, and then comes to Buffalo. And he's a big, tall, rangy guy. And some of the stuff that was written about in the article we're going to have by Mike Sando at ESPN said that exact kind of thing. He's a perfect fit for this city, for this franchise, for these conditions that they're going to play in up here. He's got the right mentality to play up here. The things that he went through in college are right for him, preparing him to be here. So there's a lot to like about the Bills draft pick. And when you start talking about it in those terms, it's easy to see why they passed on some of the other guys available at that point and picked this one.
Let me. We're going to get more tweet sheet in a moment and a couple of other topics, but one more call to answering our question, really. What should the Bills 2018 offense look like? Jose in Buffalo on the line. Jose, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, good morning, guys, or good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Today.
We're great.
Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? All right, my thing is this. I'm more of I look at it like this. Our team has gotten better. The only concerns I have is O-line and not even receiver, just O-line, really. And I just want to see a well-balanced attack. I don't care who's quarterback. I don't care Josh Allen, McCarron, Peterman. I don't care who's the quarterback. I just want to see a balanced attack. I don't want Shady being the number one receiver. I would love to see either Zay Jones or even Clay being the number one receiver. And as far – I don't know if you guys have taken a look, but is it me that – I seen Calvin Benjamin the other day. A video of Calvin Benjamin. Does he not look jacked to you?
Yes,
he looks way different than he did when he came in here midseason last year. To me, he does. You're right.
He's lean.
And that says a lot right there, too, believe
it. Yeah, I mean, a couple of things, Jose. Good points. Thanks for calling. Calvin Benjamin's in a contract year, so that probably got his attention. But clearly he could not have been happy with the way his season played out, the injuries he suffered last year. But you're right. He looks jacked. He looks lean. He looks like he'll be able to run better. And I agree with you. And this, to be honest, and we have our Twitter poll and our topic, what should the offense look like? The discussion today started, Steve, when I brought up maybe we should ask who do you want to be the leading receiver? And you're right. I don't want it to be Shady McCoy. I mean, I want him to be part of the passing game, but I don't want him to lead the team in receptions. I want to have a receiver up there. Benjamin, Zay Jones, seriously.
I want a couple of guys with 85, 90 receptions.
Yes.
You know, like
yes.
Everybody, like all these other teams.
Like everybody else can have that.
Everybody else's yard looks good. I want my yard to look like that. That's right. You want your team to look like that. That's the way it is. And Jose brings up a good point. He doesn't care who QB is because whoever – and I think that speaks to what happened last year and how much this coaching staff got out of a lesser roster. They don't care because they know the guy that goes out there is going to give them the best chance to win. This coaching staff is not going to play favorites. They're going to put the guy out there that gives them the best chance to win, and I think the fans are ready to get behind whoever it is because they know they're going to be a competitive football team. And turn them loose. Shady McCoy you can depend on. Kelvin Benjamin is a proven receiver, although you can say, hey, he's a big number one receiver. The only thing he doesn't have is blazing speed, but at 6'5", 235, he brings a lot of other things to the table that those other receivers like that don't. So, yeah, I'm with Jose. That's a great point. I don't care who plays quarterback this year. I want him to have an offense that gives me a chance every so often to go the distance. I mean, you know, snap one off and go 65 yards. You know, throw one down the field, have a guy catch it on a deep cross, break a tackle and get loose. You know, those are the kind of plays that we missed with an offense where you just didn't pull the trigger and he didn't find those tight windows and throw the football in there and have a guy make a catch. So I'm with him completely. I think he's on that same boat. I don't care who plays quarterback. Just give me something that looks like an NFL offense and give me, you know, Shady's the guy. The offense will hang on him. But you know what? You're going to have to throw it. I'm with it. I'm excited to see it.
Me too. I don't
I'm excited
who
to see it.
Quarterback is.
Yeah.
A couple of tweets from the tweet sheet on our question, what should the Bills offense look like this year? John Canelli says, you got to have a good mix. Shady will do what Shady does. We need to focus mostly on our passing game, be able to hit receivers in stride on shorter routes, but also take those deep shots when we can. Ding, 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 ding. You're right, John. That's it. That's the right answer. Yeah, Shady will get his yards, and Shady will be, you know, a maybe the most important offense weapon in the offense. But you got to be able to hit the passes. You got to hit receivers in stride, you know. And that's the 31st in the NFL. Most of it, I believe, is because Tyrod Taylor was not so as much inaccurate as he was late. He was late. He would wait too long. A receiver be open, and then he wouldn't be open, and then it was too late. Be on time with the passes. Make the throws when they're open. That's the key, I think, with this offense.
Also, one from T-Mac. I've got three words. Throw the ball. 31st in passing isn't good enough. Don't be scared to throw the contested ball outside the numbers, et cetera. Yeah, we didn't see enough of it. And it was great that the team didn't turn it over. That played to help them last year. They won a few games because they won the turnover battle by plus two. You know, or plus three in some of these games. They beat Atlanta. They beat Tampa Bay. They beat the Raiders because they were plus in the turnover margin. And that comes from not turning it over offensively. But by the same token, they lost some games because they couldn't or wouldn't pull the trigger and take some risk down the field. You got to attack a defense to make some big plays, and I think people are ready for that.
803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Take another hit off the tweet sheet there, Steve.
Right, here we go. Like I got one from Joe Bad.
Right? Joe Bad?
Yeah, Joe Bad.
Okay.
I believe the Bills must go three wide and a short passing game. This will help take defensive players out of the box and allow the QB to have a better read on defenses. It will give Shady more lanes to run through and more safety and linebacker matchups on Shady when he goes out for a pass. You know, you think about it, the Bills saw a ton of 8-9 guys in the box last year, right? I mean, because nobody was afraid that they would throw the football down the seam or across the middle they could give up small enough windows that the quarterback just wouldn't pull the trigger. So, yeah, you're right. I don't have a problem spreading them out, letting them see, turning loose the offensive line. I know the offensive linemen that they brought in, not only the guys that were here, but the guys they brought in, and we just sat with Marshall Newhouse. They're big. I mean, this ain't no young, small, athletic offensive line. They are big, heavy bruisers. And you can say all offensive linemen. No, they're big, heavy, tall athletes up front. And I think – you got to have it when you're going to run the football. If you're going to spread them out on defense, your offensive line's got to hold up inside, and you got to be able to run the football out of it. And I think it's a great way to simplify things for your young quarterback, if it were A.J. McCarron or Nate Peterman, because it does force the defense to show who's covering who when you spread the field.
You make a good point. Maybe we might need to get we need Daboll in here. We know that. But maybe we need to get Juan Castillo in. And because you know the story of the Bills' offensive line last year, start of the year trying to force feed those veterans into kind of a new system, right?
Right.
And kind of took away them on the run, and it just wasn't working. And finally they went back to what they did, and Incognito's pulling, and Eric Wood runs pretty well, and they got more productive. I mean, they almost had to go back, revert to what they did just to get something out of Shady.
Got all the way to the bye week.
No Richie, no Wood, big people, Marshall Newhouse, Bodine looks pretty big. I wonder if they go back to their original plan. And I've heard very smart football people talking about the Bills tell me that's the way to do it, because now you don't need the athletic offensive lineman. You need big guys. Right. You don't have to draft them in the first or second round. You can pick them up in the third, fourth, fifth round because they're big. They take up space, and it's more of a cap-friendly way to run the ball effectively. I'm really curious to see if that's the way they're trying to run the ball this year.
I think a couple – 2 years ago when the two best teams or the two most surprising football teams in the league were the Dallas Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders. It was Derek Carr in the year they went 12-4, and the same thing happened in Dallas with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. The one thing those two teams had in common, not let alone was a young quarterback and running backs – they had the best offensive line, the biggest offensive line in the league. And both teams took a step backward when those two – Dallas, when they lost both guards, and the same thing happened in Oakland when they lost their offensive linemen as well. They couldn't replace them. And their team took a step backwards from a 12-4 season back to out of the playoffs. And I'm a big believer in it, no question about it. You get those big offensive linemen out, and they kind of envelop people, and a guy like Shady can pick his spots. I think – there's a lot to be said for it, and I know this. The guys you mentioned, even the young guy coming in, Teller from Virginia Tech, he's the strongest offensive lineman in the draft. And that's kind of a philosophical choice by the Bills to draft a guy like that, particularly at that round. So yeah, you might be the writing might be on the wall.
We'll find out. I don't know if we'll get answers soon, but we'll find out. Probably take it to a training
not
camp.
Not soon enough. Right? We're dying for that.
We're going to talk about it, but we might not have any answers.
What did you say today? What was it? How many days to opening day or first day of training?
Oh, camp? Yeah. I mean, like, we're 3 months. 3 months from tomorrow is the first preseason game.
That's
4 months from
long.
Tomorrow is the first regular season game.
That is way too long.
Well, we got to work in some downtime for us, Steve. Don't be in such a hurry.
My vacations are coming up.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking. We need a little downtime. Yes, those games, it's only 3 months. I thought that was kind of quick. You know, 3 months from tomorrow, first preseason game.
Yeah.
4 months from tomorrow, the first regular season game.
Yeah, 2 months.
It'll be here.
2 months is training camp.
Yeah.
Right?
And then, 3.5.
Two weeks
of camp.
3.5.
It'll get here. Let's get some vacation time in first.
Summer's coming.
Summer
hopefully it'll be a long,
here.
Hot one.
Yeah.
Because we need it.
Hey, we're talking more about the Bills' offense. What should it look like? What should Baltimore's offense look like? Flacco, Jackson, what do you think? Steve and I are going to talk about that when we come back. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, presented by Kaleida Health. We're back with more on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker and John Murphy. We've been talking a little bit about draft picks, not just the Buffalo Bills draft picks, Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds, but also yesterday we had a conversation about some other draft picks around the league that are getting some notoriety for how cool their welcome has been. Yesterday we spoke about Ben Roethlisberger and his less than warm welcome for Mason Rudolph getting drafted. And now it's coming out today that Lamar Jackson, who got drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, hasn't yet even spoken to Joe Flacco. And they're talking about using Lamar Jackson in certain packages. We've spoken about that. Are you going to use Lamar Jackson packages for your offense and start doing that?
Is that a problem they haven't spoken yet?
Yeah, see, I don't think so.
I don't think
so. See, I know Joe Flacco. See, I know Ben. I don't know Ben Roethlisberger. I have spoken to Joe Flacco a number of times. He is so unperturbed about things going on around him. I don't think Joe Flacco is going to be one of those guys who's looking in the mirror, shaving in the morning, and saying, you know, what are they doing to me drafting another quarterback?
Like Roethlisberger?
Yeah, I think that is totally off his radar. He knows it, but let's face it, he's the guy that's been taking snaps there for 11 years. He's been a starter since day one. He's won a Super Bowl for them, and he's making in the mid-$20 million range as a quarterback. He's got a self-awareness that he knows, hey, he may take over for me at some point, but it's not going to be this year, and I'm going to have to really, you know, not play well for them to go to a young rookie quarterback. If they did draft him, it's to sit and watch me.
Yeah.
I think Joe Flacco's fine with it, but he's getting some trouble now because of the Ben Roethlisberger thing, I think. People are looking at him saying, hey, you're doing the same thing. It's not quite the same.
No. Well, he didn't say anything, right? Flacco didn't say anything? Did he say anything at all about
really,
Jackson?
No.
What do you mean
he's
doing the same
he
thing?
He said, they're talking about him being because nobody likes – they don't think Ben Roethlisberger – they don't think Joe Flacco is as good a quarterback as Ben Roethlisberger. They think Joe Flacco struggles. He's a check down guy. He doesn't do some certain things. He doesn't run their offense as well. He's not an elite quarterback. He's a good quarterback, but he's making elite money, no question about it. So he's a little bit of a target, I think, for his critics. And I think there's an article out today that says, you know, if he wants to stay in the league, he's going to have to become a mentor to these guys. I don't see that. Joe Flacco can sling it. I mean, there's people who don't think so, and I've seen him make some throws that are phenomenal throws. Now, he's no Aaron Rodgers, but he's pretty good. He's pretty good. And I think there are a lot of teams who would love to have him. Maybe not at $27 million or $25 million, but Joe Flacco is a guy who bet on himself and won a Super Bowl in the process, so he got the big contract.
Trying to figure out who – this is Ravens Wire, USA Today, the guy who wrote it, and he ends his post by saying, if Flacco wants to have a great second half to his career, learning how to mentor younger players – while still putting on a show in the field will do him wonders. Look, Steve, and you know this more than me.
Yeah.
Nobody mentors their way to a job in the NFL. They're not keeping people around because you're a good mentor. Those mentors, you know what they're called? Coaches.
Yeah.
You're a coach then. When Joe Flacco can't throw it, can't help them win, if he's a backup, that's fine. But when he can't get it done anymore, they'll let him go. They're not going to keep him around. What do you mean, a great second half of the year if he's a good mentor? No. You know, they don't pay guys. They don't keep guys around to be mentors, right? Do they?
Joe Flacco is not going to be a he's going to be a good friend, no question. If he's a good teammate, no question Lamar Jackson can learn a lot from him. They may become best buds. We don't know. And Joe Flacco's the kind of guy that would do that. He's a good guy. He's a good teammate. He's not a boisterous locker room voice kind of guy. He's a more of a quiet leader, kind of a guy that would let a guy like Ray Lewis take over that locker room. He's a quarterback. He's kind of a stoic guy. He's a quiet guy. But he's not going to be I'm sure him and Lamar Jackson are going to become friends because yeah. Joe's that kind of guy. But if you think for a minute that the Baltimore Ravens are going to pay Joe Flacco, let alone the money he's making now, forget that. Or if they're going to pay him what? You think Joe's going to stick around for $1 million a year to hold a clipboard? He'll be making that sitting watching TV.
Yeah.
He ain't going to do that.
Yeah.
He's not going to be a mentor late in his career. Have you lost your mind? Name one great quarterback who's won a Super Bowl who hung around to be a mentor. Joe Montana didn't do it. Jim Kelly didn't do it. He didn't ever win a Super Bowl. Steve Young didn't do it.
I'm trying to think of the ultimate mentor.
Terry Bradshaw threw a fit.
The ultimate mentor quarterback in today's NFL would be who? Josh McCown, Jets?
That's right.
You know why they're paying Josh McCown? Because he might have to play for them. He might have to play. And as soon as they
right
don't
now,
need him
he's
to play.
Their best option.
As soon as they don't need him to play anymore, he'll be gone too. They don't keep guys around to mentor. Don't be foolish.
Crazy talk.
That is crazy. Don't be foolish. Flacco will be fine. Roethlisberger's, although you and I talked about, and we didn't rip him up yesterday. We talked about it. I was surprised more than anything. And then when I went back and listened, I had another occasion to listen to Roethlisberger's yeah. quotes. I thought, well, you know, it was a radio show he was doing. I think last Friday in Pittsburgh. I thought, I kind of see what he's saying here. You know, Mason Rudolph did not embrace Roethlisberger either, right? Didn't say, oh, yeah, I need him to show me the way. He said, no, Mason Rudolph said the right thing. Roethlisberger needs to focus on his job. I'll focus on mine. And Roethlisberger, I thought, responded in kind. You know, he wasn't magnanimous. He didn't say, oh, yes, I'll take the rookie under my wing and lead him, show him the promised land. He didn't say that. I'll give you that. But I don't think he misspoke or looked that bad. I'm talking about Roethlisberger.
Right.
Do you really?
Yeah, and we like to read stuff into it. And we kind of we did have our way with him a little bit yesterday, but I did the same thing. A little bit.
I do.
You know what it sounded like, Murph? It sounded like two really good football players who don't know each other yet.
Yeah.
Who got thrown into the same team in the same position, and one of them's got to play. And one of them's played very well in the past. It sounded like two guys who didn't know each other. That's what it sounded like.
And the point with them and the point with Flacco and Lamar Jackson. The guys who play well will be the quarterbacks there, and starters and backups. It's not about mentorship. It's not about please, you know, show me the way, share your insight with me. The guys who play well will be the top two quarterbacks.
And
there,
you rarely see these guys take it personal when Roethlisberger finally sits down or walks away, or when Mason Rudolph steps in for Ben Roethlisberger because he twisted his ankle, and Mason Rudolph throws for 350 and four touchdowns and no interceptions because he's on a really great team or for whatever reason, Ben Roethlisberger is going to get the reins right back, you know, because that's the way it works. And they won't hold it personally. They'll cheer for each other when they're on the field. Believe me, when they're teammates, they're going to be for each other. So all this stuff about, you know, the warm reception these guys are getting or cold reception is a little bit overblown. Certainly it does spell something for the future of these franchises and what they're doing at the quarterback position, but nobody should be taking it personal. And I don't know that either one of those guys did, Joe Flacco or Ben Roethlisberger.
Right, I agree. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of these first round picks, talk about, you know, each team and what they're looking at. Mike Sando, ESPN NFL reporter, went through all 32 teams and got unfiltered comments from NFL executives on every team's draft picks. Interesting things that they've said about Josh Allen, Buffalo's draft pick. That's coming up when we return. We've got a lot more to go, an hour left in the show. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills off the field again. Another day of their offseason conditioning program. Rookies show up here Friday on the field for the weekend rookie minicamp. The Bills reportedly have a veteran running back in for a visit today. Kenyon Barner, who's been with the Philadelphia Eagles, just 16 carries last year, caught five passes last year, but an accomplished kick and punt return man, reportedly visiting the Buffalo Bills, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL Media. Bill said Brandon Tate is their return man last year, but Barner may be in the running for a job here in Buffalo. Meantime, the Bills starting today at noon. Now they've got individual game tickets for the upcoming season up for sale. Go to BuffaloBills.com for more information. And the Bills announced that they have 50,000 season tickets sold again this year, the fourth consecutive year. That's the first time in the history of the franchise. Bills have sold, had 50,000 season ticket members for four straight years. Around the National Football League, the Panthers signed veteran running back C.J. Anderson to a one-year deal late yesterday. He will help compete to back up Christian McCaffrey. The Broncos released Anderson a couple of weeks ago. The Saints released tight end Colby Fleener, who finished last season on injured reserve. He caught only 22 passes last year. He was just 2 years into his contract, released yesterday with a failed physical designation. Hockey, former captain Rod Brind'Amour will be promoted to head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes later this week. He was the captain of the Canes' only Stanley Cup championship team in 2006, replacing Bill Peters, who opted out of his contract last month. After his fourth year, Rod Brind'Amour, slated to be the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers. Hockey last night, the Washington Capitals beat the Pittsburgh Penguins Game 6, and the Caps advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals with that victory. And baseball, the Yankees and Red Sox are going to play each other in two regular season games at Olympic Stadium in London next year. Boston will be the home team for both of those games, June 29th and June 30th, 2019. John Murphy, Steve Tasker at One Bills Drive for One Bills Live. I know you're not a big baseball fan. We talked about the Super Bowl in London. How about Yankees Red Sox in London?
Sure.
Sure. I think it's significant because it's those two teams and because, yes, the Super Bowl, I believe, is coming to London.
Well, there you go.
You could care less, is what you're trying to say.
No, I could not possibly care less about the World Series.
It's not the World Series. We'll talk about it. Hey, joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who's ESPN insider, has been around the NFL, covering the NFL for 20, 21 years now. Happy to have Mike Sando on the line with us. Mike, thanks for joining us. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Will you do me a favor and explain to Steve why it's inevitable that the Super Bowl is going to wind up in London sooner or later?
I'm sure everything in the NFL has to do with money. So, you know, they'll find something internationally to sell their brand or, you know, expand and try to make even more money because they don't have enough. So that's, everything's money. Everything's
they don't
money.
Have enough.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, it's all about fan interest. I get it, expanding the game and all that yickety-yack. But we were really interested, Mike, in your article about 32 unfiltered views about every team's draft picks.
Sure.
Without getting into exactly who said what, but you did have some pretty interesting things. You know, I don't need to know who said this, but I would like to know, talk about what they did. They had some pretty telling things about the Bills picking not only, you know, some pretty good players, maybe some raw talent, particularly at the top of the draft with Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds, but fit those players that they did pick fitting right into what their philosophy on offense and defense is.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Offensively, I mean, you know, we know the weather in Buffalo, and we know you got the big, strong, strapping guy who, you know, does have his question marks, but they all do. You know, every quarterback in the draft has sort of a bunch of things you like and then some question marks. And so, you know, for where he's going, for what they're looking for, that made sense. I think what the Tremaine Edmonds pick is really interesting to me because you have a head coach who's obviously very involved in the players they're bringing in. The head coach comes from Carolina, where they had a really good defense, where the best player in that defense probably was the middle linebacker and a very important player in that defense. And so for him to feel good enough about Edmonds in the first round to come in and be an inside linebacker for his defense, to me, that's really encouraging. I know a lot of people like to apply their own templates and criticize picks. They would have done this, or they had him on their board here. I don't do that. I say, you know what, Sean McDermott has credibility as a defensive coach. He really knows what he's doing. He's had successful defenses. That's a guy he wants in the first round. That's probably a pretty good thing.
Mike Sando on the line with a ESPN insider who's written a really interesting post, 2018 NFL Draft, the executives unfiltered on every team's picks. On Tremaine Edwards, you quote a decision-maker, an NFL executive, is saying the linebacker is a playmaking, run-around, off-the-ball backer, and guess what they play in Buffalo? A really simple scheme in which you make plays and run around. Perfect. I haven't heard Buffalo's defense described, I guess, as that simple before. It's only been, you know, we're only in our second year here with Sean McDermott. But what is it that makes the Buffalo defense perceived as simple, do you think, Mike?
Well, I think there's some defenses that are probably perceived as intricate and complex, and I think a lot of those are probably more 3-4 type defenses, right, where you have a lot more combinations of things you can do with four linebackers and the inside guys doing this and that, and that's probably where the layers of complexity come in. And I think most of the 4-3s, particularly in the front seven, you know, you're going to have a little bit more, you know, of what we just talked about with the inside linebacker running sideline to sideline and go get the guy, go track him down.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You talk about teams that drafted for need, teams that drafted for their system. Is there any you know, truth to the fact that, you know, some of these teams just take the best player available no matter what? And it seems to me it always boils down to the best player available at the position they need.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there probably are some exceptions. Like, okay, when I was a beat reporter covering the Seahawks maybe in 2001. Steve Hutchinson was available at number 19, I remember, something like that. Well, they weren't planning to take him at all. It wasn't the position they thought was a position of, you know, huge need, and they were going to take him. So they take him. That's an extreme example where there's just a talent who is so high on your board that you're taking him even if it's not a need. That is pretty rare. I think usually you do it in the context of what your need is, and that's why most of the picks on draft day make sense, at least on that level. It's like, hey, they needed a guy, and they took him at that position, and they can justify it because he wasn't like two rounds lower on their board. They may have had three guys higher, but it made better value sense for them to address a need.
Mike Sando, ESPN Insider, whose post is about quotes from NFL executives about each team's draft picks. The quote you got on Josh Allen is definitely worth repeating and reading. Josh Allen, he is an aw shucks, likes football, makes his team visits with sweats and tennis shoes. Perfect for Buffalo. They don't need Baker Mayfield in designer clothes, okay? They need Jim Kelly. I left out a word there. But, but Mike, yeah, I mean, it sounds like whoever your unnamed executive, and you won't name him now for us, will you, right?
No.
Okay. Sounds like he gets it. He gets why Josh Allen was so appealing to the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I'm trying to think who said that if he'd been in Buffalo, but I think he definitely understood Buffalo, you know, and what they're looking for. So, I mean, you know, every guy to each his own. I mean, you know, all these guys were picked for because somebody really liked them. And I think in these cases, you can see why the Bills liked him. It makes sense. It doesn't mean they're going to be successful players or have great careers or do everything right. We don't know that. But right now, you know, a week or two after the draft, it does make sense in Buffalo. No one's sitting there going, God, I wonder what they were thinking. You know, this looks like what they were thinking, right? Yeah. I mean, they set themselves up. We can criticize and say they should have kept Tyrod Taylor or done this or that, but they needed to get a quarterback. And, you know, Cordy Glenn move, the other moves they made, put him in position to get one, and they got one.
Talk to a little bit about the, you know, the Bills were in the AFC East along with the Patriots, of course, the Dolphins and the Jets. And the Jets were one of the teams that, you know, really made a significant move. They jumped all the way up to number three. They needed to get a quarterback. They got the second quarterback taken in the draft. You know, talk a little bit about the Jets and what was said about them.
Yeah, I like the fact that you know, I think most people felt coming into the draft that that Sam Darnold was the quarterback that you didn't have to really explain it to anybody. You didn't have to say why you're taking a guy who's only 6 feet tall like Mayfield. You didn't have to try to explain why you were comfortable with Josh Allen despite whatever you thought of his completion percentage or alleged accuracy issues or, you know, hey, we're taking Lamar Jackson. Here's how we're going to change our offense. It was kind of Darnold was just sort of the guy that you just take him and, you know, nod and move on. So I think that fell well for them, but you have to remember they gave up, they paid a huge price to get into that position. You know, they had 3 second round picks going to Indy. So that has to factor in when you're looking at, you know, the decision to make the move. That said, I think they have to feel pretty good about getting the quarterback who seemed to maybe have the least question marks.
Mike, the Patriots, what did your executive say about New England's draft?
Yeah, you know, it almost becomes self-fulfilling on New England, where people just people praise them because they know they're going to win. So yeah. you want to make sure that, you know, it's like, oh, brilliant move, and then they're going to go 12-4, and you can't say it wasn't a brilliant move.
Right.
But I do think there's an appreciation for you know, the unity they have in their building, because Bill Belichick is the coach and the GM, and obviously knows what he's doing, gives them an advantage. They're able to make decisions for the right reasons, and what I mean by that is, there's a strategic long-term view to everything they do. They weren't going to pay Nate Solder to left tackle. I mean, the Giants made him the highest-paid guy in the league, offensive line, any position. And he's just, I mean, no disrespect to him, but he may be an average starting tackle in the NFL. Well, what do the Patriots do? They get a guy who fits how they play and how they need to protect. Not how everyone else does, but how Brady sets up, how he gets rid of the ball. The guy they took in the first round fits that. The running back, the same thing. They come out of this with two first-round picks as the team that was arguably the best in the league last season, certainly one of the top three, and both those picks seem to fit. You know, the running back, we know how they use running backs. They use them as well or better than anyone in the league. It's a huge part of their passing game. And so those picks totally made sense, looked long-term strategic, saved a bunch of money on Solder. Don't care so much about the medical on Sony Michel, the running back, because they're just going to pay him on one contract anyway. And it's not like they took him fifth overall. They took him in the late 20s. So I think, you know, you acknowledge they sort of know what they're doing, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah, and then we move on to the Miami Dolphins. And I agree with what you said. You didn't really know what to think about the Patriots because they do things a little bit differently. It's hard to evaluate it until, like you said, they go 12-4 and they're in the championship game every year, and you think, wow, what a brilliant draft. The Miami Dolphins, you know, they're counting on Tannehill to be healthy after his knee injury a year ago. They didn't make a move there. They got Minkah Fitzpatrick and probably what a lot of people thought was maybe one of the best athletes in the draft, and went to the secondary to help Adam Gase mm-hmm. and the Miami Dolphins. Talk to us a little bit about the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick seems really safe. You know, there's versatility there, and I think everybody, you know, just sort of nods and moves on. It's a good pick. I think the question longer term, sort of like, you know, the decision the Giants are making with Eli Manning, is how long do you stick with the same quarterback? Do you think you could get somebody else? And for where they were at, you know, could they have, I guess they would have had to maneuver with Arizona to get in there on Josh Rosen, and they just felt like, hey, we don't know if he's going to be any better than Tannehill. Let's try another year with Tannehill. But you get the feeling that could be a real tenuous situation. I mean, would you want to have your whole future riding on Ryan Tannehill, A, staying healthy, and B, being good enough that you can be in the playoff mix? It feels like they were not in a great situation, and that while the pick they made was defensible, I don't necessarily feel like the pendulum swinging in the right direction for them.
And also, Minkah Fitzpatrick, I mean, is he going to play safety? Is he going to play corner? Is he going to play slot corner? Is
nickel,
he,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, where are they going to slot him? Because he's really never played safety, but that's where everybody kind of projects him at.
Yep, I totally agree. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm looking at a depth chart here that has him at nickelback, but you know, he's obviously, I guess if you play nickel, you're playing 65% of the snaps anyway, right. And more than that, probably when you're playing, you know, well, New England actually plays a fair amount of 21, but most teams are playing 11 personnel on all the downs, so it's a little bit more defensible to take a guy who's only a nickel player. I think he'll be in the base defense too, though. They took him too early for him not to be.
Mike Sando from ESPN.com on the line with us. His post deals with NFL executives commenting on each team's picks. I have to say, Mike, almost all of the guys you talked to had fairly flattering things to say about their counterparts on other teams. It was hard to find anybody. You would think you give them an opportunity to speak, you know, anonymously, that somebody might rip another team. Nobody did. Maybe the Raiders, well, questioning the Raiders was the closest. What do you think?
Well, I thought it's interesting you say that because the criticisms of Josh Rosen were something I thought about a lot, because I don't want, you know, when you give someone an anonymous ability, you got to be careful. That doesn't mean you can just make them let them say critical things that are unfair. I want them to advance the conversation and try to explain what's happening. And I felt like with Rosen, a little bit of a tough one, because nobody really liked him. And part of me in the equation, of this is like, okay, let's just say Rosen really does have a bad personality and rubs people the wrong way. How much does that matter in the final evaluation of him playing well? And so I think that's probably the one that was the most, you know, negative, if you will. And I'm not 100% sure what to make of that. People say he's the best passer. Well, it's a passing league, right?
So yeah.
Do you
sure.
want the best passer? Wouldn't that be good to have the best passer? But a lot of when you look at the great quarterbacks in the league, even if they're not buddy buddy with everybody, they certainly, you know, treat people in a manner to where they command respect. And I don't know, where does that leave us with Josh Rosen? I don't think we really know, but that's the concern. And yet we don't really know, right? I mean,
right.
I always say head coach and quarterback are the two most important things, and no one knows how to hire either one. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like from what your guy told you, you're right about Rosen. There's some red flags there. I mean, there's no other way to look at it, right? And you got quotes from an executive saying that Byron Leftwich is going to want to take a poke at him within a week.
That's kind of joking, But, you know, every one of these guys I talked to could tell me a specific story about when they visited and you know, the feedback you get is that, you know, the coaches there, other people there weren't really going to bat for him. And, you know, what does that mean? It's hard to know in the final analysis whether that's going to be what makes or breaks them. It's just something that, you know, rubs some people the wrong way, and they didn't want to deal with it.
Yep. Mike Sando, ESPN, we're talking about his post that in 2018 NFL draft execs, their unfiltered view on every team's top picks in the draft. And it's pretty interesting to read because the executives around the league who critique each other in an unfiltered way are pretty enlightening, because I think the guys that are doing it have an idea of how difficult it is. So they're not really that critical. I think that's one of the most surprising things about it, because, and I told Murph this, Mike, you can comment to this too, a little bit like the grass is always greener. Their picks always look good because, you know, you can see the reasoning behind each pick, even though there's some question marks. There's question marks with every draft pick. Is that not correct?
It's true. It is true completely. And some of these are going to fail, and some of them are going to succeed for reasons that have reasons other than the picks themselves. I mean, I know Steve knows that so many things. You know, they fire the coach every 3 years, and sometimes they just want the new guy. And I had a great conversation with the head coach last year about that. It's like, especially on the offensive line nowadays, it's like the guys come in, they're not trained, they play before they're ready, they look terrible on film, and then there's a new coach in 2 years, and they just get churned out of the league.
Yeah,
right.
You know, that's hard to be good at personnel. When think of the way the league was when Tom Landry and Chuck Knoll and those guys were in, people came in, and they felt you had a real 5 or 10 year plan,
right?
No
such thing. You could keep players together, and now it's just like
you
I couldn't even name
plan. Yeah,
if you asked me to name the Bills' last 10 coaches in order, I probably couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's right.
We wouldn't do that to you, Mike.
We would. Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Mike.
That would only take us to 2014. I'm kidding.
Thank you, Mike. Great work on this. Thank you for joining us.
We'll see
it. Okay, bye. Mike Sando, ESPN NFL Insider. His post from last Wednesday, the 2018 draft, execs unfiltered on every team's picks. He got anonymous quotes from NFL executives about every team's picks. The Bills stuff is important. Let me repeat the one on Josh Allen, who the NFL executive described as a cold-weather quarterback, big and strong, not frail and little, in a cold-weather city where it's windy. You're going to have to throw it through the wind, and he can do those things. Good job for that. Let me say, though, I do think that part of the Josh Allen, you know, as you look for reasons why the Bills drafted him, I think that's overplayed, Steve. How many windy, cold days are we looking at this year? And we're guessing. 8 home games, maybe 3 will be really rough weather, and that would be a lot. So I think people kind of oversell that a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, you're playing in the Northeast, you're playing at the Jets, at the Patriots, you know, you're going to get some other bad games. But the part or the quote that really gets interesting about Josh Allen. He's an aw shucks, likes football, makes his team visits with sweats and tennis shoes. He doesn't dress up for his visits. He's perfect for Buffalo. They don't need Baker Mayfield in designer clothes. They need Jim Kelly. Yeah. That's a really good quote. And I think it does kind of capture what the Bills, and maybe more importantly, well, as important, what Bills fans are looking for in their quarterback, right?
Yeah, and also that same executive talking about Tremaine Edmonds, the linebacker, Edmonds, is playmaking, run around off the field, off the ball backer. And this exec said, and guess what they play in Buffalo? A really simple scheme which you make plays and run around. Perfect. Edmonds makes us plays sideline to sideline. He can run through the line of scrimmage. He's raw, but he has enough athleticism to defend the short pass, the short zone pass, because guess what they play? That Carolina defense, short zone pass. Edmonds is perfect for it. And that's, you know, that's what you want to hear, and that's what other execs see behind, you know, when they see Buffalo picking these guys, they understand at a deeper level not only that the guy's a great athlete, but they're going to ask him to do what he does best and run around and make plays and get across the line of scrimmage and sideline to sideline.
Yeah, and I want to get back. I'm going to get back to Josh Allen in a moment. The stuff about Rosen intrigues me. And look, I admit, and in Buffalo 2 weeks ago, it was Josh Rosen. How could they pass on Josh Rosen? You're beginning to see reasons why, I think, and not just from the Bills standpoint, and some of it from Mike Sando's article. I've never met Josh Rosen. But people who have issues, and including this unnamed NFL executive, you know. And he said, the
you
quotes.
You can't even repeat it. Because,
well, some of it I'm kind of reading through it here because, everyone recognizes the top talent with the talent with Josh Rosen, but he is not the top guy in the draft because nobody likes him. I mean, who says that about somebody? Nobody likes him. That's what this NFL executive said about Josh Rosen.
And he's referring not to, he's not referring to guys in the NFL. He's referring to people at UCLA. He's talking to his coaches.
Potential teammates in the NFL.
Potential teammates. He's talking about awkward encounters that people have had throughout the draft process at the combine. And it's, you know, it followed him. And that's the reason he fell to where he did. Well, if you call fall, he got picked 15, was it? Or no, 11. 10th. So he's a top 10 draft pick. So he's extremely, extremely talented, no question. But there were, you know, guys taken ahead of him. And the only reason, basically, seems to be his personality. And let's face it, these are teams that are going to put a lot of investment into this draft pick, like the Buffalo Bills traded up to number 7 to get Josh Allen. The Jets traded way up. And the Browns have been through the ringer at quarterback. They don't want to make another mistake either. So these teams are fully invested in these draft picks. And we've seen quarterbacks fail for a million reasons. But we've also seen some huge flameouts for one reason. It's the kind of person they are.
Yeah.
You go back to Ryan Leaf, Johnny Manziel. Those are two off-the-cuff examples that were high draft picks that just didn't flame out, and it wasn't because of their talent. It was because of the person they were.
Mike Sando writes about this, and he clearly talked with more than one NFL executive. He writes, Mike Sando, who we just had on the air, talking about Josh Rosen, an exec noted that exec after exec said the same things about Josh Rosen. One called the former UCLA quarterback a combination of Jeff George and Jay Cutler, who would struggle to lead a team. So when people call up here before the draft and after the draft, why don't the Bills, why Josh Allen instead of Josh Rosen? I think those are the issues. I really do. I think that was a sentiment that I picked up around our group here, you know, our decision makers, that people would ask me, what do you think of Josh Rosen? I think I said two things typically. Probably the best passer in the group, best arm, best passer, not the strongest arm, but the best passer. And I wonder about him as a leader. Is he a leader? How is he as a teammate? Those are the things that are coming out from these unfiltered and anonymous quotes from NFL executives.
And I think it's interesting, too, that people say, well, you know, they go out and they interview these guys. They bring them into meetings. They talk to their college coaches. They talk to their high school coaches. They talk to their teammates. They're trying to find out all this stuff. There's a reason they do all of that. There's a reason, because all of that stuff and the kind of person and human being they are makes a huge difference when you're in a locker room 4 months or 5 months with these guys locked in, and you got to get them to love and respect you and play hard for you when you're pulling the trigger. And they find stuff out about it. And at quarterback position, it's imperative. It's critical for the guy to be a person that the players can rally around.
And so, and again, we're talking about, we're all this discussion engendered by Mike Sando's article and his interviews with NFL executives. Now here we are, almost 2 weeks since the draft, right? Who would you rather have? Josh Rosen with the spectacular passing arm and all of these questions about his personality, his leadership ability, and whether or not his quarterback coach is going to have to smack him around? Or Josh Allen, who we'll read that quote again. I think the answer is pretty obvious. We'll take a break. We want to thank Mike Sander for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Back with more in a moment. More on Josh Allen and Josh Rosen when we come back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back to One Bills Live. We got about a half hour left. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Beautiful day in Orchard Park. Needless to say, Steve and I will be working hard after the show, planning tomorrow's show. We got a good plan already for tomorrow. Thurman Thomas, I think you know him, scheduled to be with us tomorrow, Steve.
Finally, I've been on the air for a couple weeks and he hasn't showed up yet.
Yeah.
I put the word out as soon as I got on. He said, yeah, I'll show up.
Terminator tomorrow at 1. Trent Murphy, Bill's new defensive end, who we had on the show when he signed on the telephone, will be sitting right over there next to Steve tomorrow at 12:30, plus a whole lot more coming up on the show tomorrow. I want to get back. I'm kind of
go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So we just had Mike Sando on about his post, really good post about NFL executives weighing in on each of the draft picks. And the guy he talked to about the Bills was pretty complimentary about the Josh Allen pick. Cold weather quarterback, big and strong. You're going to have to throw it through the wind. He can do that. But the one quote that kind of sticks with me about Josh Allen from this unnamed, anonymous NFL football executive, Josh Allen, the Bills pick. He's an aw shucks, likes football, makes his team visits with sweats and tennis shoes. He's perfect for Buffalo. They don't need Baker Mayfield in designer clothes. They need Jim Kelly. Sweats and tennis shoes. They don't need Baker Mayfield in designer clothes. That's the way that they describe Josh Allen. Now, there's another quarterback in the AFC East who would not be described as aw shucks, tennis shoes and jeans and sweats. And did you see Tom Brady at the fundraiser last night with his supermodel wife, Giselle?
Lovely bride.
Fundraiser in New York for the Met. And he wore, if you're watching on the TV side on our simulcast, you can see it. He's got like a blue blazer with some sort of gilded gold thing
it's
around.
Not blue,
the
it's black.
Collar. Is it black?
It's black with it's gold ridiculous. Sequin collar.
He's got a
ridiculous. Is a little round the bend. It's flashy, no question about it.
It's ridiculous.
He does look like he's part of the wait staff or something.
Yes.
At a, yeah.
And yeah. All
listen.
Right. What?
When
defend
married,
that. Go ahead and defend. Right,
listen. You're
like
married
that.
To the top fashion so model what? Icon on the planet. You know that he didn't pick that outfit out.
So he what is he, a four-year-old? He has to wear what his wife or his mom picks out for him? Come on.
Bro.
Any real guy would look at that and say, I'm not wearing that.
Listen.
Find something else.
That's the way
want.
It is. And the, you know,
that's not it, the way it is. No. It's a ridiculous
Some
look.
People are saying he's dressed like a magician.
Well, you got like you know, a bunch of tweets right from people talking about
he's
this.
Dressed like Steven Seagal. He's... They should have traded. They should have kept Jimmy Garoppolo.
Mm-hmm. Fashion is one thing. Brady looks like a fool.
He does not look.
He looks like a fool.
Listen, if you've seen some of the outfits at this thing, that's part of the deal. It's a wild outfit. It's a gala. It's a costume thing. Rihanna has a huge sequin thing. She's got a hat like the Pope. She's wearing a hat like the Pope. Rihanna.
Yeah.
It's all these, you know, Kanye
Tom
West.
Brady.
Kanye West has got a jacket that's like completely covered in glitter. And Kim Kardashian is wearing an outfit where she looks like she should be carrying an axe and an oil can. She looks like the Tin Man.
Maybe Brady shouldn't be hanging around that company.
He went for his wife. Listen, when he came in the league, he was just like Josh Allen. He wore jeans and flannel shirts.
Well,
now he married up and, there, you know. Now he's got to do that kind of thing.
Indefensible.
Listen, I've had to wear.
Indefensible. Nobody dresses like that. No real person dresses like that.
No, look at the outfits. It's a thing.
He's not a model.
It's a gala. He's not trying to. Like, come on, man.
He's not trying to look like a model?
Listen.
Did you look at that picture?
I
Who do you know dresses like that?
Somebody going to the Met Gala in New York on a red carpet with the paparazzi there. That's the way. Look at this joker here. I mean, come on. Jared Leto. He looked.
He's an actor. A Hollywood guy.
Are you kidding me? What are these? You know, it's a costume party. It's a costume
party. It's a fundraiser for the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
I'll admit, I would not be caught in my own imagination in some of these outfits.
No.
Let alone in really real
bad.
Life. Yeah, it's
really bad.
It's pretty bad.
You'll never see Josh Allen dressed like that. I don't care if he can only hit 56% of his passes. He will. I would guarantee you he would never dress like that.
Well, no, because some Tom Brady wore it, and he couldn't wear it again.
Who wore it best?
Who wore it best? You never get caught in the same suit as another man, unless it's a tuxedo.
Hey, we got phone lines open, and we've got our Twitter poll still alive, and we'd love to hear from you on Twitter as we talk about the Josh Allen and the Buffalo offense. What do you think the offense should look like? We're not looking for predictions here. What do you want the offense to look like? What should the Buffalo offense be in 2018? On Twitter, we offer you a couple of alternatives.
Yeah, Jimmy Callahan tweeted in, I think you make a great case for the wide receivers. To piggyback your point, I think there's really only so many footballs to go around. If LeSean, Kelvin Benjamin, Clay get theirs, there's not really much left for the others.
Look,
Zane Curley or Serviceable, he thinks we're good enough at wide receiver. Thinks we got enough.
Only so many footballs to go around. This football never went around the last couple of years with Tyrod. You know, it was going too shady. I mean, come on.
Well,
yeah.
I get it.
What do you mean? I'm not worried about
Shady's.
It's only so many footballs to go around.
Shady's
going to
be in the
conversation. Let's get close to that.
Shady's going to be in the conversation for the Hall of Fame when he's done. He was an elite back for a long time at two different teams. And some of the stuff he's done, now it's getting to the point in his career where he's got some numbers that kind of stack up with those guys. So, and he's still, to me, I watched him play a lot well like you. I mean, you watched him and called every game last year, and you saw him. The guy's still got a lot left in his tank, in my opinion. The game he had against Jacksonville, against that really good defense, he snapped off a couple of big runs, at least one big run, and also a couple of great pass receptions that were timely. And the guy's just all there. He's definitely the centerpiece of your offense. He's a multiple skill set running back, can run outside, he can run inside, and he catches the ball. He can also line up outside and run routes. He's got it all. That guy has to be the linchpin of your offense, particularly given the fact that you've got the quarterback situation that the Bills do. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. He's got to be the focal point.
The good
point
part
of the offense.
About it is he's not Adrian Peterson, who has to line up behind the quarterback and he got to hand him the football. This guy can do it, and you can get him the football in a lot of different ways, which opens up everything, and a defense has got to play the entire field against you, even if he is the centerpiece. You know, you can line him up on one edge of the field, and they still got to defend everything. So I think he's a great weapon. I think he's going to be the centerpiece of the offense. No question, they got to do everything. They got to run it and throw it, and they got to throw it down the field and short and quick. But I think Shady is going to get – I think he has got to be the centerpiece of the offense.
Let us know what you think. What should the Bills' offense look like? On the tweet sheet from T-Mac, very succinct to the point, I've got three words. Throw the ball! 31st in passing isn't good enough. Don't be scared to throw contested balls outside the numbers, etc. Contested balls, you know, force it into coverage a little bit. That's something they never did, Steve, with Tyrod. And Tyrod had his strengths, but, man, he never threw a contested pass. Very rarely would he give his receivers, including Kelvin Benjamin, guys who can do this, give them a chance to go up and get the ball and fight for it.
I get all that, and it's true. But you don't know that none of that stuff was called. You don't know that that's not what their offense would have, should have, was supposed to look like. That's I think, why why Tyrod Taylor, part of the reason he's not here now.
Yeah.
They expected him to make certain throws he just refused to make. Now, the benefit of it was he could make up for some of those deficiencies because he could run, and he did have, you know, the ability to dump the football off, and he could make some plays outside the pocket. But by and large, they expected him to make certain throws that he just did not make. And that's why everybody's clamoring for an offense where the ball's in the air. And I don't care if you force it, do something to get the football down the field, out of the quarterback's hand, out on rhythm. And it just never materialized last year. And I think for the most part, you can say what you want about the coaching staff. This is a new coaching staff, new offensive staff. You can place that right in the lap of Tyrod Taylor and the kind of quarterback he was.
That's why they sat him down November 19th. Let's go to Fred in Rochester. Some thoughts on Josh Allen. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, hi, guys. Great show as usual. Tasker, you should be in the Hall of Fame. I said it time and time again. And
again.
Someday you're going to be in it, buddy.
So I appreciate it.
Josh Allen. this guy seems to fit this puzzle perfectly, you know. I'm with you, Murph. I get excited when I hear about the guy and when, you know, we haven't seen him throw a ball yet, you know. But the things you guys have been saying pretty much today are, is who can throw the ball? Who can throw the ball? This guy, apparently he can throw the ball, and he may throw some contested passes. Who cares, you know? Let's get these guys down the field. This guy can get them down the field. I'm not saying the other guys can't, but this guy's proven that he can. He's got a bullet for a delivery, and he's got a rifle for an arm. So let's get him in the training camp, and let's start right away and see what he can do.
All right. I hear you, Fred. I would say let's not rush him. You know what I mean, Steve?
Yeah.
I want him to play. I want him to play well. We're talking about Josh Allen. But if he's not ready in their estimation on September 9th, I'm okay with that. There's others who can play.
Because the way they've built the roster as well, he's not the only question mark.
Right.
You know, the offensive line's got to be answered. They got to come through and they got to come together, and maybe they will, and the coaching staff will be able to see during training camp that, yeah, we got the right group out there, and they stay healthy, and they stay get the right guys in there, and all that yickety yak that all has to take place over the, you know, the weeks of training camp. But that's not the only, you know, it's not just a fact. You're going to plug this guy into a team that's already set and has a you know, wide range of veterans on both sides of the football, and they're established. Yeah, there's a lot of question marks on this team. They had to revamp their entire front seven. They're going to have a rookie middle linebacker. They're going to have what looks to be a third-round draft pick at defensive tackle coming in. They've got extra guys, a new guys that came in as pass rushers. You know, the only thing that's really set from a year ago that is the same as it was is the secondary. And even then, they had to add a couple of guys for depth. So while it sounds great to just bring this young quarterback in, plug him into the system, and you know, let's start letting him develop, you got a lot of other things to come together, and hopefully, and the plan is for training camp, the way it did a year ago, where they came together and things started to take off as the season got rolling, that's the plan again. But it hasn't happened yet, and they got to let that develop as well. There's a lot of other things beside the quarterback that you got to get together.
Let's do a little NFL true or false, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. This one is false, I think, immediately. Sorry, I just feel that way. David Carr, former NFL quarterback, NFL Network analyst, says the Denver Broncos made the best move of the offseason by signing Case Keenum during free agency. Case Keenum, the NFL's best offseason addition? False. Saquon Barkley is a better offseason addition. Kirk Cousins is a better offseason addition. Should I keep going? No, Case Keenum is not the best offseason addition. False.
I agree. I'll leave your passion to make the statement. Yeah, Case Keenum is a journeyman quarterback who had a great year on a great team. The team that he had the great year for and went 14-2 with, or whatever it was he played, they let him go. And they had a chance to keep him. So, and they paid another guy $30 million to come in. They could have kept Case Keenum. They went for Kirk Cousins. I'll let that lay there for just a minute.
NFL true or false, part two. This one is a little bit, I'll let you go first with this. This is a Bleacher Report article. It says Josh Rosen, fourth quarterback chosen behind Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen. Josh Rosen, who we were just talking about a minute ago, should be the favorite to be the rookie of the year with the Arizona Cardinals. Josh Rosen, the favorite, because he's with offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, running back David Johnson. He's playing with Larry Fitzgerald. Those are all good things. But Josh Rosen, the favorite to be NFL rookie of the year. Steve, true, false? There's a nice fat softball right down the middle of the plate for you to...
I would say false.
Yes, of course you will. Tell us
why.
I'd
say false. The reason is that depends on a couple of things happening. One, Sam Bradford has to get hurt. And everybody say, well, yeah, he always gets hurt. Well, you know, it still has to happen. And this is an Arizona team that knows how valuable Sam Bradford is. And Josh Rosen, let me just tell you something, on his best day, is not nearly the quarterback Sam Bradford is on his best day. Sam Bradford's going to give them the best chance to win. And Sam Bradford is going to start the season. And if he stays healthy, he's going to start all 17 weeks for the Arizona Cardinals. And Josh Rosen won't even sniff the field. I'm telling you that right now. Also, even if he does get in and play, if he does get in and play from week one, somehow, and it does happen, Sam Bradford gets hurt in training camp and Josh Rosen is the guy, he is not going to be rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year in the National Football League. There's too many other guys in this league that are set up to have more success than he is in Arizona. I don't care who his coordinator is.
I got false, too. Steve enumerated some good reasons there. Finally, this came from Willie McGinnis, also making his mark as a broadcaster, right? NFL Network, Willie McGinnis. He says Von Miller is the best pass rusher in the NFL. True, false? Can I go first?
Yep.
False. I got Khalil Mack ahead of him. I got Melvin Ingram of the Chargers ahead of him. I may put Calais Campbell of the Jaguars ahead of him. When he's healthy, J.J. Watt will be a better pass rusher than Von Miller. No, Von Miller is not the NFL's best pass rusher. 3-4 years ago? Yep. Not now. I say false.
Yeah, I got to – he's good. He's really good. I might go true on that, although I like Aaron Donald, too, and he's a defensive tackle. I mean, Aaron Donald's a good player. So, you know, you're splitting hairs. To say he's the best, okay, you know, on any given Sunday, he may be. But to say he's the best overall and going to be that way and get the most sacks, I don't know, that's a big stretch. So I'm going to have to say, reluctantly, I'll say false, just because he's great, he's part of the conversation, but I don't think you can rubber stamp him as the best pass rusher. Certainly he is in that conversation, but there are too many guys in too many good situations, and you're right. If J.J. Watt comes back along with Jadeveon Clowney, either one of those guys is in the conversation as well. So, no question, Von Miller has been the greatest pass rusher in the league at times during his career, but to say he is at this point in time I think is premature.
There you go. NFL True or False, presented by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Steve and I back with more in a moment. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. We learn from today's show, presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. They are the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had a good show, really a better show than we deserve to have. I believe that. We had Marshall Newhouse, who really cleaned up our act in the first hour of the show. Bills right tackle, offensive tackle. I don't know why he said right. He might be the left tackle.
Well, he did upgrade our show because he was the most articulate person on the show at the moment
the last
he was on. Yeah.
6 years. Marshall Newhouse joined us. We talked to him about football, obviously. We also talked to him about how he's already 9 years into his career preparing for his life after football, his post-football career. Here's what he said.
The last 4 or 5 years, been thinking about what's next, and so that comes with kind of applying myself, getting out of my comfort zone, finding things that I'm passionate about. And for me, it's been entrepreneurship and business, tech, kind of investing, all those things. And so I went to CES, was like a trade show in Vegas for the tech world. I mean, all the most innovative things you see right there in front of you is kind of this crazy week-long thing in Vegas of all places. That was a lot of fun. I went to the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, did a lot of networking there. It's another thing you realize, just these people that you meet while you're in the NFL, it's a great door that'll be to be open while you're playing, but sometimes those doors close when you're done. So capitalizing on where I am right now and just building genuine relationships that'll carry with me when I'm done playing.
Really enjoyed our time with Marshall Newhouse earlier today.
We're going to have him in all the time.
If he will do it.
He may not want to slum with us that much.
We're going to have to broach the topic of his feet.
He's definitely a step up, right?
Over us.
Over us, right.
Yeah. Also today we had Brent Vegan on. He's the offensive coordinator at the University of Wyoming. He was Josh Allen's coordinator at Wyoming. He also was Carson Wentz's coordinator in college. Steve asked him to compare those two. Here's what he said.
Josh has been able to learn from Carson kind of through us. They've had conversations in the past, and I think, you know, as much about how to play on the field, but just how to go about being a professional, how to, you know, take in the details, how to prepare. You know, I think those are the things that separate the good from the great in that league, is just it's the things off the field. And I know Josh has to prove those things, but I know in Carson, kind of from a distance, he certainly had a guy to look up to and emulate. And you know, ideally be able to follow in his footsteps.
Brent Vegan, the offensive coordinator for Josh Allen in college. Steve, you know, we should add a segment to this, What Have We Learned? And you and I should each talk about what we've learned from today's show. How'd you feel about that? I learned things. This is why I do the show. I come out of here with I learned a couple of things today. I learned Marshall Newhouse is one of the most articulate players that's been around here in a long time. Love having him on. I learned from Brent Vegan that There's a lot to like about Josh Allen, including his smarts, how smart he was, and that there's more to his completion percentage than just 56%. And I learned that you have no problem defending Tom Brady when he dresses up and looks like a clown. Holy mackerel. That was an eye opener for me.
I learned we were kind of little bitter old men too, because we're lampooning the fact that all these young whippersnappers watch games on their phone, and neither one of us can do that.
I'd rather see the game than look at my phone.
My Twitter feed is like telling me that I'm an old grouchy old man, get off my lawn guy. Sometimes I guess I am. I got to admit it.
When we have time, let's do that. Let's talk about what we learn each day. All right.
All right. Deal. We'll do that.
We'd like to thank our production assistants, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torino, and James Robel, our producer, Jay Harris. Good show tomorrow. Trent Murphy, Bills defensive end, Thurman Thomas. You know who he is. Coming up tomorrow at noon, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.